Okay, so good morning and welcome to this morning's meetings of the Transit Commission. We last met in June, and again, these meetings are still being held electronically by Zoom. I believe all members are planning to attend today because we didn't get any notices, but I'll just do a quick roll call to remind everybody that we need also 7 members to maintain quorum. So Councillor Suds, I see you there.
Good morning.
Councillor Gower.
Morning.
Councillor Kavanaugh.
Hi, everyone.
Councillor Tierney.
Good morning, Alan.
Councillor McKenney.
Morning, all.
And Councillor Brockington, we know, is going to join us.
I'm here, Alan. Good morning.
Oh, you're on? Okay, great, Riley. Commissioner Caricato.
I'm here. Hi, everyone.
Thank you. Commissioner Olson.
Yes, good morning, Chairman.
Councillor Williams, or Commissioner Williams, are you with us?
I'm here too. You
here? Okay. And Commissioner Wright Gilbert.
Good morning, all.
Here. And Vice Chair Cloutier.
Morning, bonjour.
Okay. As mentioned, we are again participating in the meeting electronically via Zoom. So instructions for the members of the public wishing to submit comments or participate as a delegation in this meeting were included in the agenda. Oh, my apologies. So those who do not need to participate in the meeting can watch via live stream on the city's YouTube channel. For those who are participating in the meeting, please keep your microphones muted until I call on you to speak. I will provide each commission member with the opportunity to ask a question or comment in due course. Commission members will be called on first, followed by other members of council who may have joined the meeting. At any point, if you wish to speak, you should use the raise hand function that Zoom has on the right-hand side that you'll find. By opening the attendees list using the Zoom controls at the bottom of your Zoom window near the audio controls. The committee coordinator and I will be watching for those cues. The usual 5-minute speaking limit will apply. So before we get started with the commission's indulgence, I'd like to for us to receive a brief presentation from Mr. Manconi about OC Transport receiving certification from APTA, which is the American Public Transportation Association. This will first require that we approve the addition of this item to today's agenda, and Vice Chair Cloutier has a motion. Vice Chair, if you want to go ahead.
Indeed. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bonjour tout le monde. Motion by me that pursuant to subsection 89.3 of the procedure bylaw, bylaw 2019-8, the Transit Commission waive the rules of procedure to add a verbal update from the General Manager of the Transportation Services Department regarding OC Transpo, American Public Transportation Association certification, and that pursuant to subsection 83.4A of the procedure bylaw, the Commission dispensed with the requirement for staff to provide a separate written report on this verbal update.
Is that motion carried?
Carried.
Carried.
Thank you. Okay, so I just want to start off the Commission meeting by recognizing that OC Transpo is being the first transit agency in Canada to join the American Public Transportation Association's Health and Safety Commitments Program, which launched on September 9th of this year. This program is the public transportation industry's overarching pledge to passengers that public transit systems are taking all the necessary measures to operate safely throughout the COVID pandemic. The health and safety of customers and employees in OC Transpo has always been our top priority. As a member of the program, OC Transpo has received a seal of commitment that will be displayed across the transit system soon. This seal is important because it means OC Transpo is committed to fulfilling the highest industry commitments for keeping transit as safe as possible. A key component of the Health and Safety Commitments Program is the shared responsibility of our system and our riders to follow the guidelines. Riders rely on us to follow these commitments, and OC Transpo relies on riders to protect themselves and other customers. It's important to note that although OC Transpo just joined the Health and Safety Commitments Program, OC Transpo implemented its health and safety measures long before today. Included in those measures is the fact that OC Transpo was the first transit agency in Canada to implement mandatory masks back in June, something every other transit agency in Canada and many abroad have since adopted. I want to thank Mr. Manconi and the entire OC Transpo team for their tireless efforts and dedication throughout this pandemic, and congratulate them on their seal of commitment. Mr. Manconi, I believe you have a few details to share with the commission. Would you like to do that now?
Yes, thank you, Chair, and good morning, members of Transit Commission and councillors. Just some background before I get into, I only have a couple of slides on this topic, but back in April, when COVID was gripping North America and the world, I was asked to join the American Public Transit Association's Task Force on Recovery and Restoration of Transit Services. I believe I'm the only Canadian rep on that committee, and it's done an amazing work. There was three streams to the task force mandate: communication and restoring public confidence in transit, recovery and restoration of services, and then transit leadership post-COVID, that longer view in terms of looking at where things could go and how we improve and remake ourselves and so forth. There is great work rolling out from all of those elements of that task force. You're going to see things coming out in streams. The certification process is a science-based approach to ensuring that we're cleaning, maintaining our vehicles for the public, using the best of the best standards from around the world, CDC, Johns Hopkins University, public health agencies, and so forth. So if we just turn on the slides, I'll quickly go through what it entails. Thank you, Chris. So that is the seal that you're going to see put on our vehicles and our stations. And it's a commitment to an overarching pledge to restore confidence to our customers that we have a program that meets very, very high stringent standards. Next slide, please. And we're following the public guidelines and official sources for this information, including, you know, there was concern about the use of public transit being a spreader of germs in the COVID world. I'm sure many of you have seen those independent worldwide studies that actually shows that with proper measures, public transit is not a major source of spreading of the disease when you have all these elements contained in it. So we're fully aligned to it. Protecting each other by cleaning, disinfecting vehicles, wearing face coverings. And you remember, again, Ottawa was the first in the industry to do this. Now it's the norm across Canada and the U.S. Keeping our passengers informed. Next slide, please, Chris. Putting health and safety first, obviously, and reminding everyone that if they feel any symptoms or they don't feel well, please stay off of public transit. And we've adopted all these practices and policies. And like I said, it's going to be popping up on all our vehicles and our stations and BRT stations and so forth. And this applies to all modes of travel within our system. So it's para, transit, and also conventional service, both bus and rail. I do want to take a moment, Chair, to thank all of the employees that are behind the scenes. You know, they clean 1,000 buses every day, the rail vehicles over at RTM, the stations, the station attendants, and the back office systems, which has kept our system running, the driver's lounges and the workspaces and so forth. They've done a phenomenal job in record time. Again, Ottawa is seen as a leader in this space, and many of the elements of this program come from some of the ideas that we've put forward. So thank you very much, Chair, and that ends my component on the APTA piece.
Thank you, Mr. Manconi, and again, congratulations. Now, on to the regular business. We'll start with the call for, is there any declarations of interest? Okay, hearing none, we'll move to the confirmation of the minutes. First, we have the regular minutes, number 14, from the open session of the Commission's special meeting of Wednesday, June 10th. Are these meetings confirmed?
Confirmed.
Confirmed. Thank you. Next, we have the confidential minutes number 14 from the closed session of the commission special meeting on June 10th, which were emailed to members separately. Are these meetings, are these minutes confirmed?
Yes.
Confirmed.
Thank you. Last, we have the minutes from our last regular meeting of June 17th. Are those minutes confirmed as well?
Confirmed.
Thank you. Okay, we'll now proceed through the agenda to see if there's any items we can carry on consent. The item one, Confederation Line and Bus Service Update, we'll hold that. I believe Mr. Maconi's got a presentation. Item number two is the delegation of authority for contracts awarded from the period of July 1st, 2019 to December 31st, 2019 for the Transit Commission.
Chair, I have a question on that item.
As do I.
Is a quick question, Councillor McKenney, or do you want me to hold it?
Probably best to hold it. It's two or three questions, actually.
Okay. All right, then. Item three is the 2020 Transit Operating and Capital Budget Q2 Status Report and COVID-19 Financial Mitigation Strategies.
The recommendation.
You want to hold that too? Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. And then item four is the status update, Transit Commission inquiries and motions for the period ending 4th of September 2020. Recommendation reads that the Transit Commission received this report for information. Is it received?
Received.
Okay. All righty. So we'll now go back to the first item, which is the update. Mr. Maconi, begin whenever you wish.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning again, members of Commission. We have a very lengthy and detailed presentation that staff are going to walk you through in a moment, as soon as I'm done my opening comments. The presentation gives a full update on all elements of the rectification plan. So you'll have everything you need to understand where we are, where we're going, and the status of each element. I also wanted to include, and we have, give you a look into the how we're doing this fall service in terms of the elements contained in that plan, and a look ahead in terms of where ridership is and the challenges before us and so forth, and how we're proactively looking at to the future. I want to talk, the presentation covers customer service. There's been some phenomenal work going on there. I know some members of the commission have actually tweeted out the great responses that our new staff are doing in terms of getting timely information out to people and so forth. And then also COVID responses in terms of how we're handling it both internally and externally. So, Mr. Chair, you know, especially with the one-year anniversary, I've been asked many, many times, what's my assessment of where we are, and what does that look like? There's five key outputs from RTM that I want to share with you in terms of how I respond to that question, because it's a complicated question, and there's a lot of moving parts to where we are. I want to preface the five elements by saying, We have collectively made significant progress, and we're in a much better place than we were months ago. But the five key outputs that I'm seeing from RTM, and those outputs are important because they drive the outcome, which is safe, reliable, consistent service. The outputs are, the first one is there is significant progress on all elements of the rectification plan. And what's important by that is, by this point, is there is zero debates with RTM on what needs to get done. And there is zero discussion about, are they throwing all the resources they need on it? So they're committed. Those two new CEOs, I want to thank them, Mario Guerrera and Nicholas Truchon, are focused on this rectification plan. There's never a... We're disagreeing on what the elements are, what needs to be done, and so forth. So they're all in. There's no doubt about that. Number two, is consistency and reliability of service. You're going to see metrics that demonstrate in the last number of months, service reliability has increased, and equally important, consistently increased and reliability has increased. The third element is quick, best-in-class response to issues occurring on the line. There will always be issues occurring on the line. There is no perfect railroad, and how you respond to them defines the ability of the railroad to perform and to take care of its customers in a safe, reliable, consistent manner. So there's been a lot of progress there. Number four is open, frank dialogue with you know, the commitment to my strategy of no surprises. They are sharing the good and the bad, while both of us, both parties, respecting our contractual positions. And that's what great partnerships do. And the last one, number five, which is the key, it's all about the customer. You, a city council that owns this city, and our customers that depend and require consistent, safe, reliable service. They get it. They're driving. They understand that. Brought in good measures. They're doing reorgs even below the CEO levels, and they're bringing the expertise and the people that understand that it is all about the customer. So with that comes the next question. When do we know if everything's fixed to the high standard that we required under this contract? Well, you may have heard some of my media interviews. We're not just going to rely on RTM, and we're not just going to rely on our own assessment of it. We're bringing in a fresh set of eyes that have not been working on the project. They're independent, and they're going to check all elements of the seven elements of the plan and come back to us and tell us, yes, it's rectified to the required standard and industry best practices and so forth. And that work has commenced. The real test is the sum of the parts. And what I mean by that is the seven elements being completed or substantially completed plus winter. And I've been very candid with the CEOs at RTG and RTM. Winter will be the test for all of us. And as I've said many times, we cannot bring our customers and yourselves through another winter like last year. They understand that. And they understand that at the macro level, but equally important, they understand it at the tactical level. And I can share with you that the mayor and the chair and the city manager shared with the new CEOs on the first week on the job that the little things matter. The frozen water fountain. We all remember that story. Those are the things that matter from a optics and from a, if you can't get those things right, what's the confidence level on getting the bigger things right? And so they've been working on the winter plan, very proactive. They're throwing extra resources. They're listening to our advice, and they're committed in that. So all seven elements plus winter. And I can tell you there are no new issues that have crept in. There's no new major issues that have come in. We've reported out on all those elements. You've all seen my memos, the cracked wheels and so forth. There will always be small things occurring. Heck, this morning we had a raccoon at one of the stations. You know, so things are going to happen. But I know that the expectation is not that I tell you about a raccoon at a station. The expectation is the outcome. Safe, reliable, consistent service. So with that, we're going to give you a presentation today. And you're going to see some new graphs. And they're important because you're going to hear over and over again, they're achieving the 15 trains in the morning. And a reminder, because it's been a long time. It's 15 trains in the morning peak. It's 13 trains in the afternoon peak. It's 11 in between, and ramp up, ramp down in the morning and the off and off peaks. And in the weekend, it's 11 trains. And that gets the service outcomes based on the ridership when this project was conceived. We don't need 15 trains, but they have been putting 15 trains out. We're going to continue with 15 trains. We want to see how 15 trains perform in the winter. We want to see how 13 trains perform in the afternoon. And those numbers, the ups and downs, they match your ridership curve. They match all the traffic patterns and the ups and downs of the system that have been modeled. So they've been achieving the 15 in the morning, they've been achieving the 13, the 11, and so forth. And we have to monitor COVID, and we, the city, have the right, if we want to choose to scale down, if ridership continues to be low, we can scale down. But for now, we're staying with those numbers because we're exercising the system, the processes, the staff. We don't need that volume of trains, but it helps on spacing. It gives customers extra comfort. But you all know there's very low ridership out there right now. The graphs that you're going to see today give you not just how well are we doing as a percentage. We're striving for 100, but we will never get to 100. There's rarely railroads that perform at that level. There's none in the world. We want high 97, 98, that range. But what's equally important, and there's a very good graph, and I hope we've done a good job of representing what the key message is on that, is variation or variability is what we don't want. In other words, if we get a 98% average month, we don't want a lot of 100% and then a really bad day of 60%. That's not the journey we want. We want consistent, minimal variation in that high 90 performance. And the good news is that's what they're getting. And, you know, I'll talk about the elephant in the room. I think people are oversimplifying that the only reason we're achieving this is because of low ridership. I've been very, very, very hard on RTM, as you all know. And I'll pay them when they achieve the targets. But this isn't just a fluke. It's not just because of low ridership. You're going to hear from Troy. The software has been installed on the doors. The catenary system has been assessed and readjusted from end to end. The track is being worked on and so forth. And so will additional loads stress the trains? Absolutely. Will winter stress it? Absolutely. And that's why we collectively can't answer the we are there yet. But the sum of the parts and getting through the winter season will be a test for all of us. And we will monitor and report and so forth. So safe, reliable, consistent service every day. That's the key to the mission. And the outcome for, or the output for RTM is their monthly payment. When they achieve those things, they get their monthly payment. So Chair, I'm now going to turn it over to Troy. And again, I will note it is a very lengthy presentation. I make no apologies for that. I wanted to give you everything that we had. It's a wholesome update. So thank you very much, Chair and members of the Commission. I look forward to your questions and comments.
Thank you, John. Troy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chris, if you could put up the presentation, please. And maybe you can just scroll through the first couple slides. There's the first one with the agenda that we'll go through. There we go. Perfect. So, yeah, the overview of today's presentation will provide an update on the performance of Line 1 for the past year, as well as an update on the rectification plan. I'll then turn things over to my colleague, Pat Scrimger, and then the presentation will continue with an update on the fall service change, next steps with regards to the O-Train Ambassador Program or the Red Vests, as well as an update on COVID-19. Thank you. If you can move to the next slide, please. Okay, so in looking back over the performance of Line 1 over the past year, there have been many good service days, but no one here will deny that there's been too many days in which reliability issues negatively impacted the service and ultimately the commutes of our customers as well. This graph here shows the percentage of service delivered and is consistent with the previous updates to the Transit Commission. While it is a good starting point, as this graph provides a broad summary of the monthly service trends, as Mr. Manconi indicated, a more in-depth look at the service on a daily basis is required to more clearly demonstrate the day-to-day service levels that our riders would have experienced, their journey. Go to the next slide, please. Thank you. So similar to the previous slide, this graph here shows the percentage of service delivered. However, rather than being on a monthly basis, we're looking at it on a daily basis. Each dot that you see is the percentage of planned service that was delivered on each specific day. And that wavy line that you see running horizontally across the top represents the overall service trend. And it corresponds with the months at the bottom. The dotted line across the top of the graph represents the 97% service delivered threshold. while this is not a contractual element, we have observed, you know, from our experience that when the service delivered drops below 97%, customers may have experienced a service disruption during a peak period, which is highly disruptive, or multiple but smaller service disruptions throughout the day, or even a combination of both. So we're using that 97% threshold as a general barometer as to how the service is performed. Dating back to the start of service and for the first few months, while the monthly service, you know, the target did range between 97 and 98%, we know that the actual service delivered varied significantly from day to day. You know, and at times it varied throughout the day. This is largely due to the issues that we previously reported on, namely the TCMS or train control monitoring system, the VOBC or vehicle onboard controller, doors, as well as a few other issues. You can see this at the top left hand of the graph, which shows, you know, the quite a bit of variability, each one of those dots. And, you know, you can see that there's some dots in the low 90s. And then when you get into October, November, you have even some dots under 90%. And those are particularly challenging days for our customers. As we approach late December, and while a result of the action items and mitigations associated with the TCMS and VOBC, which have not reoccurred, our customers experience frequent and sometimes lengthy disruptions associated with the power and arcing events, the overhead catenary system, our OCS, switches, and wheel flats. And this is what our customers experience throughout January, February, and March. You know, it's evident that those are very difficult months for our customers. The overall monthly reliability was poor, and there were many individual days that were particularly challenging for customers. So once again, if you look at the, you know, January, February, March, you know, you can see some days there where, you know, we were under 70%. The overall average for the month, 88, 90, 94%. But there were some really, really rough days for our customers. With the end of winter through the months of April, May, and June, we experienced an improvement in reliability until the beginning of July, when fleet availability was reduced as a result of the vehicle inspections due to the cracked wheel investigation. And I'll talk about that shortly. You can see on the graph that towards the end of July, though, that we start to see an improvement in the day-to-day consistency, as well as the overall reliability is going up. And so that's evidence, and you know, you see that trend line going back up towards that 100%, and you're seeing those individual days, the dots starting to congregate closer to that trend line. So there's less variability that our customers would experience. Since the beginning of August and into the first half of September, service has been trending in the right direction. We've experienced a much higher degree of reliability and a significant improvement in the day-to-day performance of the rail line. It's not perfect. There's still areas for improvement, but we are encouraged by the positive trend so far. We go to the next slide, please. So our goal remains to provide 100% of planned service or get to it as close as possible. We strive for this on our conventional bus service, our paratransit service, as well as our rail lines. You know, as Mr. Manconi indicated, reliability and consistency are two of the most important factors that impact our customers the most. When on a transit system, customers want to get to their destination without disruption and in accordance with their planned journey. Furthermore, with a rail line specifically, customers expect the day-to-day consistency in the service so that they can go about making their daily plans without having to worry about making daily adjustments to their commute or their personal lives. Since the launch of Line 1, our customers have gone through a great deal of ups and downs, from good service days to days with major disruptions that significantly impacted their daily commutes in terms of increased travel times, delays, as well as the frequent use of R1 replacement bus service. Next slide, please. This final graph is one of the new graphs that you, Mr. Manconi, had indicated, and it ties together the previous two into one graphical representation of both the daily and monthly performance of Line 1. Once again, the graph uses the same variables as the previous slides, with percentage of service delivered on the vertical axis and time in terms of months on the horizontal axis, and aggregates all the data that you saw in the last graph into this color-coded representation. Green showing the monthly service delivery above 90%, and red, you know, showing the monthly service delivery where it's below 97%. Again, you can see in the first few months of service, while the overall monthly service delivery was high, which is why the boxes are green, there was quite a bit of variability. in the service with some poor service days. Service days typically operate between 97 and 98%, with some days falling to the low 90s and even, you know, a few days below 90%. Then during the winter months and again in July, major service disruptions and reduced fleet availability resulted in both a significant drop in performance and was highly inconsistent. You know, particularly the winter months, customers did not know what to expect. Very challenging months for our customers and our staff. What we want to see is a highly reliable service over the course of a month, a service that is consistent on a day-to-day basis. September service so far this month is a very good example of the service we expect to see. It's currently operating at over 98%. And since you're seeing it, you know, it's a green box and it's a very, very thin, small green box. What that is showing is that the day-to-day service is very consistent. It's hovering around that 97, 98, 99%, which is where we want to see it. You know, conversely, if you look at January, the service was highly variable. And that's why you see such a large red box there. There were some good days in which service was upwards of, 98, 99%. But there were a large number of days in which service dropped below 80, 90, and, you know, even under 70 and 60%. With the exception of July, which was due to the reduced fleet as a result of the wheel cracks, the service throughout the spring and summer months has been improving for our customers. And as I just mentioned, as we move into the fall months, service is presently operating at 98% delivered, and the day-to-day consistency has been there. So with that said, I'll now provide you with an update with regards to the rectification plan. Next slide, please. As you're aware, back in April of this year, RTG responded to the city's notice of default, providing a rectification plan to address the key issues that have been impacting the performance of Line 1. While the COVID-19 pandemic has created some operational challenges, work on improving the reliability of the system has continued throughout, so much so that, as evidenced by the previous graphs, service is trending with day-to-day consistency in the right direction. Throughout the COVID pandemic, we've continued to encourage RTG to make full use of this period of reduced ridership to expedite and advance work to improve the service on the rail line for our customers. And as a result, you know, as Mr. Manconi indicated, it wasn't a fluke. As a result of the summer months, we have seen the improvement, and the city had approved 4 temporary service adjustments and the associated implementation of R1 replacement bus service. As well, we had an adjusted service start on one occasion that allowed us to complete some of our own survey work. Next slide, please. These temporary service adjustments allowed RTG to advance work on the vehicles, tracks, as well as the overhead catenary system, with some of the work requiring full access to the rail line and vehicles. As a result of the temporary adjustments to service, RTG was able to expedite critical infrastructure work that, given our short overnight out-of-service periods, would have otherwise taken weeks, if not longer, to complete. In addition to the rectification work, surveys have been completed to both confirm the current condition of the infrastructure, as well as to provide an up-to-date baseline to inform the future and ongoing planned maintenance activities. Once again, as Mr. Manconi indicated, as part of the rectification work, the city is also undertaking its own independent review and associated survey work. Next slide, please. So just a bit of a refresh. The updated rectification plan that RTG had presented to the city in the spring outlined 7 key areas of improvement that have an impact on service reliability and ultimately impacts our customers. So the 7 key areas are, the vehicle brakes. This item is linked to the wheel flats, the overhead catenary system, or as we commonly refer to as the OCS, switches and switch heater failures, vehicle traction power. If you'll recall that this item relates to the inductors, the line contactors, and the circuit breakers, vehicle passenger doors, vehicle auxiliary power or CBS units, and the vehicle HVAC. Next slide, please. So I'll go through each one one by one. With respect to the vehicle brakes, you will recall that in the winter there were several occurrences of wheel flats on the vehicles, which ultimately impacted RTG's ability to meet our daily fleet count. The wheel flats in general can be caused by a number of factors, but typically are a result of frequent and rapid braking, as well as traction issues. And this can cause the metal wheels to create some flat spots. So to date, several software updates have completed associated with the braking systems. This includes updates to the computer-based train control system, or CBTC, the train control monitoring system, or TCMS, as well as the guideway intrusion system that we refer to as GIDS, or GIDS. These software updates have improved the overall performance of the braking and train control systems, which ultimately has minimized the number of related issues. RTG will continue to monitor and investigate, and you know they're looking at other fine-tuning of the vehicles to further improve the performance. Next slide, please. The next item on the rectification plan was the OCS, or overhead catenary system. During the one of the temporary service adjustments that took place over the summer, RTG was able to make quite a bit of progress on all the work associated with the OCS. During the time, RTG completed a full end-to-end inspection of the OCS. Adjustments were completed, which included the repair and replacement of all the mechanical supports, otherwise known as the parafills. Recall that was one of the causes of our service disruptions, as well as made other adjustments to the OCS. Next slide, please. Switches and switch heater failures. As you recall, switches are a key component of the rail line, and they allow for the trains to move from one track to another. Switch heaters are intended to keep the track switches clear of snow and ice during the winter season. As we know, a switch that is blocked can stop train service until it is cleared. By way of information, there are a total of 7 switch locations across the entire line, for a total of, it's 28 switches, but in seven locations. So in preparation for the upcoming winter season, RTG has been working to improve the performance of the switch heaters. RTG has upgraded the switch heaters to provide advanced notifications and alerts to our Transit Operations Control Center that monitor the line 24/7 when there is a potential issue with a switch heater. So if something's being experienced with the heater, it's not functioning properly, our TOCC would get a notification and we can dispatch a technician. And the goal is obviously to get that attended to prior to it having an impact on service. Additional ductwork is also being installed to further direct the hot air towards the key locations along that switch. Most importantly though, all 7 of the switch locations are being upgraded. The 3 switch locations east of Tremblay Station are being upgraded to more powerful gas heaters. In a review of all the switch related disruptions that we've experienced, confirm that all but 1 of our service interruptions as a result of a switch or switch heater occurred in these specific locations east of Tremblay Station. And next slide, please. The remaining 4 switch locations in the west are also being upgraded with improved electrical heaters and heat trace elements. This will help increase the functionality of the switches during the winter season. So the important point here is, although the vast majority, I think over 96% of our issues occurred in the east end, we are looking at switches across the entire line, and how can we make it more robust? And RTG is moving forward with that. So the materials are starting to arrive. They've indicated that all the materials should be here by the end of September, but they have started to arrive. And the plan is to complete all this work prior to this winter season. Next slide, please. The next item is vehicle traction power. This includes the items such as the line contactors, inductors, and circuit breakers. Once again, you may recall from the February Transit Commission meeting that several mitigation measures were put in place to minimize the faults associated with, at the time it was described as power and arcing issues. And this first began towards the end of December. And I think we all remember the New Year's Eve event. Just as a bit of a refresh, the mitigations that were implemented over the winter and spring included the following. They RTG completed a deep clean of the train roofs to remove the dirt and carbon on key electrical components. There was the addition of non-conductive paint that was added to the vehicles, as well the rooftop rooftop covers were modified to protect the rooftop components from further arcing and buildup of dirt carbon, which was making it more susceptible to power related issues. In addition, the longer term fix is the replacement of the inductors, which is the key component to this. That's well underway with 11 vehicles 11 single vehicles already being completed. All of these measures have contributed to an overall improvement in the performance of the vehicles. And to date, we have not seen a reoccurrence of those. Once again, I'll just refer to it as the power and arcing issues. If you remember, though, you know, the trains were getting power. It was just creating, there was a buildup of that dirt carbon in the area. It was creating that arcing. So, you know, there wasn't a power issue per se on the line. It was specific to the vehicle. And as I said, we haven't seen a reoccurrence at this point. You know, they're moving forward with their final solutions to fully rectify. Next slide, please. Vehicle passenger doors. Issues related to the train doors was the most frequent cause of service-related interruptions. While this is not uncommon for most rail systems, doors and door interaction with customers is a frequent cause of delays. It was clear here in Ottawa that the doors were not meeting performance specifications. Several measures have now been implemented across the train fleet to improve the door operations. The most significant update was the SIL2 certified door software. This has now been validated and now been implemented. Overall, the doors are less likely to go into fault. However, they do maintain all our current safety requirements. You know, we've been pleased, you know, the new door software has been in place for a couple months now, and they are meeting our performance expectations at this time. Additionally, at the city's request, work is also underway to implement additional mechanical adjustments to help our electric train operators fix door issues in a more efficient manner if they occur. This will allow them to rectify the issue and minimize any impacts to service. So we recognize that, there will still be, you know, door faults from time to time. But anything we can do to assist our operator who is there to rectify that issue, get that back in service, will benefit everyone. So overall, just, you know, we're going to continue to monitor the door performance for the continued reliability, what we've seen the past couple months. Next slide, please. With regards to the issues associated with the auxiliary power or CBS units, you know, the CBS is a component of the power system. And, you know, there's many components in these power systems, but it's a component of the power system. And they were, you know, I'll just use the term, they were overheating and failing and turning, causing service impacts. The software that, you know, controls these has now been upgraded across the fleet. And what it does is it protects the components of the CBS from failing, but it also protects other aspects of the power system from damage. As a result, when there is an issue, the upgraded software would protect the CBS unit, and it would allow us to return the vehicle to service in short order. So the root cause is still under investigation, but we've put some software into mitigate the issue, to minimize the impacts, and then allows us to keep that to get that train back into service. The last item on the rectification plan is the vehicle HVAC. To date, all of the HVAC deficiencies have been identified and have been addressed during the 100,000 kilometer inspections. Several hardware improvements have also been made to address HVAC issues, including adjustments to the temperature set points, ductwork, as well as improved filters. Ongoing monitoring of the HVAC system will continue throughout the winter season and into next summer to ensure it is continuing to meet our performance expectations. But the important point here is that, you know, we did have a very hot summer, and we are very encouraged by the results that we received. You know, they're meeting our performance expectations at this time, but we recognize we need to look at them through all seasons, and it needs to continue. Next slide, please. So moving away from the rectification plan, you know, Mr. Manconi had mentioned about track work. So as you know, over the summer, there were a number of temporary speed restrictions that were put in place on line one due to heat. As all rail tracks can expand in periods of extreme heat and conversely can contract in cold winter months, the implementation of temporary speed restrictions is a common practice across all rail systems in the world with similar climates. During extreme weather conditions, temporary reductions in operating speeds are put into effect in order to ensure safe train movements. This is a standard operating procedure for OC Transpo, which has also been previously used on O Train Line 2, the Trillium Line, for many years. This procedure is one part of OC Transpo's safety program that proactively monitors train and track conditions when extreme temperatures are experienced. Throughout the summer, adjustments to the track were completed along the alignment. The city is working with RTG to make further adjustments to the track that would minimize the number of temporary speed requirements during inclement weather events and address other ride quality issues, such as the noise and vibration that have been raised by customers and residents. Next slide, please. So, with respect to wheel cracks, as reported to council in July, RTG, while undertaking a routine daily maintenance program, a train wheel set was found to have a steel crack on one of the wheels. As a precaution, and in accordance with safe operational procedures, a fleet-wide enhanced daily inspection regime began immediately to ensure continued safe operations. As part of our regulatory framework, Transport Canada, the Transportation Safety Board, or TSB, and Council were immediately notified of the occurrence. As well, the TSB has begun an independent investigation into the cracked wheels. To date, RTG and Alstom continue with the daily inspection regime, which is being undertaken concurrently to the independent TSB investigation. Next slide, please. Once again, and I can't stress this enough, it's independent to the TSB investigation. RTG and Alstom have identified the root cause of the wheel cracks. And the city has concurred. We have leveraged industry experts, metallurgists, to work with us to ensure that that RTG and Alstom are taking all the right steps. And we feel that the root cause has been identified and the right actions are being taken. They have determined that the cause is to be related to an improperly aligned screw, which creates undue stress on a part of the wheel, which then ultimately leads to this small crack that was observed. While the retrofits were possible, Alstom elected to replace all of the impacted wheels on each of the vehicles, and the city fully supported this decision. To date, the work to replace all train wheels is now underway and is expected to be completed sometime in the first quarter of 2021. With that said, despite the enhanced inspection regime, RTG has been able to increase the train count and meet our daily service requirements while continuing the wheel inspections. Next slide, please. So, although not required for summer service levels, RTG provided 15 trains during the morning peak periods throughout the month of August, with the exception of 3 days. Since September 8th, RTG has consistently met the required commitment of putting 15 trains in service on line one during the morning peak periods, as well as the required number of trains for all other periods of the day. We are very pleased that the number of trains is being met, reliability is increasing, and that we've been able to increase the frequency of service for our customers. Mr. Manconi had indicated, obviously the increased number of trains allows our customers additional space to practice physical distancing, which is an important element, one element of our service recovery plan. In addition, and as a result of the work that is completed to date, the 38th vehicle has also been released into the operational fleet. And lastly, in closing, staff are going to continue to work closely with RTG to ensure that the focus continues to be on improving the reliability of the service for our customers. The city will continue to monitor elements of the rectification plan and will be completing our surveys and other inspections to validate this work. I'll now turn things over to my colleague, Pat Scrimger. Thank you.
Thanks, Troy. If I could have the next slide, please. So I'd like to start by talking about the fall service change. This service change began on Sunday, August 30th. The main elements of that are we're continuing to run bus service to replace line two, O-Train line two, to allow for stage two construction. We returned to the full route network in June. And one of the big changes with the late August going into September change is that school service has been removed. We have reduced service slightly on some routes, very frequent routes, by removing some individual trips due to the very low ridership we have been experiencing. Next slide, please. As I say, the main thing is the return to the school, return to universities and high schools. So we reserved service to some middle schools and to many high schools. We work closely with all four of the school boards and the two transportation agencies that represent them. We made a number of service adjustments where the schools had modified their start and end times, particularly end times for some of the school boards and the number of people attending. We've also assigned dedicated standby buses, which are available at the key times, have been over the last couple of weeks and will continue to be until things stabilize to provide more capacity if required on individual trips. At the universities and at Algonquin College, the UPass program continues this fall at all four of the post-secondary institutions. All students attending classes full-time on campus do have a UPass. The provisions for students studying online are different among the four institutions, and any students who have questions about that, we recommend that they contact their university or their college to get the details. Next slide, please. On paratranspo, we are continuing to accommodate all customers. In many cases, we're able to keep the number of customers per vehicle down to one. It remains low. Customer volumes continue to be lower than usual. We're at about 50% of our normal volume of trip requests. So there may come a time when some customers will need to travel with other customers on the same vehicle as they've been used to in the past. To keep the vehicles safe for everybody, the touch points on both the city-owned vehicles and on the contracted taxis are sanitized regularly, and all vehicles are undergoing enhanced cleaning every day. Some customers are continuing to use the online trip reservation system, as has been in place for some time. We're now at about 100 online trip requests a week, which represents about 4% of all the trip requests that are coming in. The project to deliver the full online services, not just trip requests, but also all forms of account management and trip tracking, that project is ongoing, and we expect to be moving into testing and with a pilot group by the end of the year. The next slide, please. For customers who are eligible for discounted fares, we've revised our application process for community passes so that can be done by mail or phone and no longer requires people to come to one of our customer service centers. We're moving ahead very soon, and I'll be able to give you more information as soon as we can, both to you and to our customers, on when paratranspo customers will be able to register the number of their Presto card if they use a monthly pass. That will remove the need for customers to show a receipt and will remove the need for a paper transcription of their pass number, their card number, as they get on the bus. That will be coming very, very soon. Later on, as mentioned earlier and as included in our 2020 business plan, we are discussing with our fare system suppliers the possibility of accepting Presto cards on paratranspo vehicles so that customers can just tap a Presto card to either validate their monthly pass or to pay for an individual trip from the stored value e-purse. And we'll get you more information once we are able to lock that down. And finally, on this page, we are moving ahead very quickly to bring in the ability for customers to pay their fares on the conventional part of the transit system by tapping a credit card, either at a fare gate or on a bus. That's in development very strongly right now with our supplier putting a lot of effort on this project. And by the end of this year, we will have one fare gate enabled at one O-Train station for testing so that we can exercise not only what happens at the gate, but also in the back end as those financial transactions are processed. And then through 2021, our vendor will be continuing to extend that to all fare gates and all buses. The next slide, please. So as you know, ridership was very heavily affected by COVID. Transit ridership has been through the summer at about 28% of usual levels, considerably up from the very low 15% that we were at earlier in the year. And we've been seeing some ridership increases gradually, but noticeably week over week. At the end of June, we were at 23% of normal levels. At the end of August, we were at 33% of normal levels, still very low. But we'll be watching that very closely. And we're watching it right now to see what's happening with September. And we'll continue to monitor the ridership closely and make any adjustments to service and where capacity is allocated as that continues. Next slide, please. This graph shows the very rapid fall that we had in March, the fairly low ridership that continued. You can see it bouncing above and below that negative 90% range up until the beginning of June, the gradual increase since then. Some of the ups and downs are related to not long-term trends, but to things like the day of the week and all those two downward spikes there in July and August are holidays, for instance. And you can see that where we are now at the end of this graph is between 60 and 70% down from where we normally are. Next slide, please. The O-Train Ambassador Program, the red vests that everyone has become familiar with across all of the O-Train system, and in fact, before Line 1 opened, has been very successful in familiarizing customers with the new system. We're now beginning to scale down the temporary program and bringing in the permanent long-term program that Council has approved in the 2020 budget. So we are starting to recruit into the full-time station attendant position. These are very similar to the O-Train ambassadors, but with slightly greater operational responsibilities and no longer a temporary position. So we're making that transition right now, and all of the O-Train ambassadors are going to be replaced by station attendants in the month of October. And if current O-Train ambassadors are successful in the competition for station attendants, then a lot of our customers will continue to have a familiar and friendly face in the station to help them. The next slide, please. I want to say a few words just to bring you up to date on the COVID safety measures that we're taking here at OC Transpo that Mr. Manconi was mentioning earlier and the chair was mentioning earlier. As you know, masks continue to be mandatory for customers and staff at all points on the transit system. As Mr. Manconi spoke about at Council, we are planning a proactive blitz to ensure mask compliance. We're planning that for early October with the focus, as always, on education. Signage is installed and continuously being reviewed and refreshed and altered as required across the system to remind customers, to advise and remind customers of the requirements for safety. Enhanced station and vehicle cleaning continues, and hand sanitizer dispensers are still available at all stations on O-Train Line 1 and at many of the transitway stations. Next slide, please. Protective shields, as you know, have been installed at the operator cab in all buses, and doors are already available on O-Train, on train cabs. Cleaning materials are available to all staff at every building. The appropriate personal protective equipment is available to all staff. And our observations are that customer compliance with the mandatory mask, the mask requirement continues to be very high. The next slide, please. Internally, we're providing weekly updates to all staff on the health and safety situation within our workforce. The key messages to staff are always that masks are mandatory in common areas of the workplace, that it's necessary to maintain physical distance and keep conversations brief when discussing things with your colleagues. It's important that our employees wear a mask at all times when they leave their personal work area and when physical distancing is not possible. A reminder, as always, to wash their hands, self-assess every day, stay home if our employees feel sick, and always to get tested if you see any symptoms of COVID-19. The next slide, please. Since the beginning of the pandemic, 35 of our approximately 3,300 colleagues here at OC Transpo have tested positive for COVID-19. Out of those, 18 were frontline staff. Out of the 35, 21 of those people have recovered from their illness and are back to work. And at this point, 14 are continuing to self-isolate and are recovering. The next slide, please. whenever there's a COVID positive case within our workforce, as soon as we hear about that, we begin an investigation. All of the vehicles and all the work locations where that employee worked are deep cleaned. Employees are identified by OPH through contact tracing, and they're asked to go for COVID testing as a precaution. We communicate to Council and Transit Commission all of the public-facing cases among our staff members, and all cases, whether public-facing or internal and behind the scenes, are communicated to all our staff and to the unions who represent them. And we have a departmental task force who is continuing to work very closely with public health to ensure that there is an alignment on all COVID-related matters. The next slide, please. So I'll turn it back to the chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to John and Troy for any questions you may have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Scrimger. Much appreciated. We'll go to questions. First up is Councillor Tierney. Go ahead when you're ready, please.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a few questions here, so I'll keep them brief. First of all, John, I think this is probably for you. How is RTM doing when they're responding to problems? And further to that, let's face it, there was difficulties in the past. How is RTM, what's their mood right now working with us?
So response to incidents on the system is can make or break the experience for the customer. And I've got to give Mario Guerra full credit. He's a former TTC employee. He's run railroads. He's the CEO of RTM, so it all reports up to him. And he made it a mission of his to ensure that they improve significantly in response times. So we all remember New Year's Eve. That was trains stuck there for hours and hours. You remember the rules in terms of under 5 minutes is when patients start to, you know, patients are okay, but anything over 5 minutes, you're stuck on a train. It gets very problematic. And we have had trains have issues. We had one last night, but they quickly moved it out of the way. There was options for the customers. We communicate out and so forth. So they've done a really, really good job. And they understand if they focus on those things, that gets them out of the penalty box in terms of monthly payments. And they have to work their way out of being out of default. So those things kill them in terms of performance metrics, which drives their payment, which drives the default notice that we're still in with them. So they're very, very focused on that for all the right reasons, the customers and their payments and safety.
Okay, thanks, John. Obviously, I'm very elated about the fact that finally, I think it's 8 years later, the ability to tap with a credit card or whatever the case may be can happen. How did you make Metrolinx actually get this done?
So this is not a Metrolinx initiative. This is when we went with our model with Scheidt and Bachmann, our supplier, who are phenomenal. We guide our destiny. You recall when we gave you that presentation, how our fare gates and fare vending machines and bus tap technology works. And I'll give Scheidt and Bachmann credit. They called me a couple of weeks into the pandemic, and we had a very good discussion about technology acceleration. The only place that's even going to be close to what we've got this fall, later this year, is New York City, where you'll be able to pay with credit card, Apple Pay, Google Pay. And yes, it's COVID related in terms of we want touchless, but it's also that customer experience of no wrong door. We make it very, very difficult in the transit industry to take people's money. And our approach is going to be you can pay any way you want. Debit is tricky. I will be very candid on that. It hasn't been tested robustly in transit. That's the last frontier in terms of what could come next. But by the end of the year, it's not a pilot. It's a test station. We want to roll that out, and customers will be able to buy an adult fare using Google Pay, Apple Pay, and their credit cards. And that's important for our tourism, but it's also important for the casual rider. It's great for COVID, but it's also great for recovery. And so that task force that I talked about early on, we are pushing very, very hard to make it very easy for customers to use our system coming out of as part of the recovery strategy.
Well, thank you for pushing ahead on that, John. It means a lot. Also, what about some of the stage two, you know, we learn from examples in stage one where the catenary system, there's a, related to the coverages in the stations, all those things. Are we updating the East and West End consortiums on, like, how do they understand this is the new style catenary system we have to use? Are those conversations taking place as we develop stage two?
Yeah, so it's a wide range of things. In terms of standards and so forth, those get slid over in terms of any lessons learned and so forth. What's different on stage two in terms of the line one extension is Kiewit, who is, you know, one of the largest construction companies in the world. They have catenary teams. They have a catenary business, so they're not subbing that work out. That de-risks some of it. But more importantly, all the lessons learned get slid over. A great example is the welding temperature of the tracks, the set point. It's a technical discussion, but it's an example. That has already been transferred over to them. So remembering that Michael Morgan and myself, we manage stage two. So everything that we've learned slides over. On the vehicles, I can tell you that all of that stuff has slid over in terms of retrofits and so forth. So the new vehicles that come off the line come in with the enhanced learnings and technology.
That's very good news. Some of the East End enhancements that were going to happen at Blair Station, the canopies, the extra elevator, all those things. Do we have a status on that? Are we still continuing on, or is COVID kind of putting the brakes on some of this?
Continuing on, but I'm going to ask Pat if he's got an update, and if not, we will certainly get it to you. But things are rolling along even with COVID. Pat, can you comment?
I'm sorry, I had a little technical problem there. Can you just
Pat, just real quickly
nudge me on the topic?
The Blair Station, you know, they have the additional staircases, the elevators, the canopy, you know, the reconfiguration of the platform. Is that all still taking place?
It is. Sorry for the trouble, and you can see I'm a little fuzzy here on the screen. Yes, it is still taking place. We're continuing to do the work. We will get it done. There's no, yes, there's holdups, just delays in working because of everyone's revised work arrangements, but there's been no difficulties, and we'll provide updates as that gets closer to completion.
Okay, that's great. Local bus route wise, let's face it, it was kind of spotty last year. I'm noticing a great consistency, a lot less route cancellations now. Is this something that we can expect go forward? And I mean, that's, let's face it, as counselors, we find out very quickly when there's cancellation of buses, and I touch wood, I haven't had that many cancellations.
No, you're right. There's a couple of drivers of that. COVID, obviously lower numbers, makes things a bit better, less traffic. But again, there's been a real strategic push, and I'm going to give a big shout out to Jim Greer, who rarely is out there in front getting credit. He runs the bus operations, and him and his team have been doing a phenomenal job. Again, I know right now everybody's saying, well, because of COVID, everything's so much easier. It's not. We've had staff that have been put on split shifts to ensure that they don't get sick. Jim and Troy and Brandon have been doing a phenomenal job of making sure that operators are brought in. And I'll give a shout out to the union. They've been through this with us on COVID, and their message to their staff is, we need you in at work, but also as an employer, to the city manager's credit, we've been very flexible with home arrangements, the back to school, and things like that. We're working with our employees on a case by case basis. If they have elderly people issues at home and so forth, so if everybody gets along, you get great service. The other piece is, when the train doesn't break down, we don't have to take buses off of local routes. Yeah. So I can tell you that the R1 supplementary, those 20 buses we have parked over at the stadium, we're down to 5. And soon, if this continues, we can pull those off. That's 5 extra buses we can put into your communities and give more space and social distancing to our customers.
And you've really touched on something, John, the great work of the Red Vest OC ambassadors. Look, they just identified 61 cases of COVID again today. It doesn't look like we're trending in the best direction. So we want to keep our employees safe, obviously. But at the same time, on the platforms, are we developing a plan to try to say, okay, folks, can you please go in this cart, or try to balance the carts out to have less people in every cart? Is there any strategies around that?
No, other jurisdictions are trying that, and it just simply doesn't work. The logistics are, I've seen the dots on the platforms. We considered all that stuff. We looked around the world. The push to wear the mask was the best thing. the push to, you know, social distance where you can. There is a lot of space right now, particularly in the trains. The bus routes are the watch item, and that's why we're deploying extra buses to schools in particular with the challenges we're seeing out there. But no, we're not going to be doing the dots and the spacing and trying to get people to do that. It's just logistically, it doesn't work. I think people are getting climatized to wash your hands, wear your mask, and social distance as much as you can.
Yeah, fair enough. Now, the doors, first of all, maybe you can give me a little bit of confidence and how much more confident you are with the doors. But more so, I know we were planning on testing because when winter comes up, obviously, if the trains get cold when all the doors open, and we are looking at possibly doing the on-demand button push, but with COVID, would we still go ahead with something like that? Are we consulting with OPH? Is it better to have all the doors in the train open up, let that gust of, even though it's cold air, go through? Are you taking all this into account as we're getting closer to testing that on-demand?
Yes, we've postponed the on-demand. We're not going to introduce another touch point right now. There may be some premiums for us because there is heat loss to the vehicle, and in fairness to RTM, that's something we got to talk about. But we're not going to introduce another touch point right now. It's just mixed messages to our customers. It's going to come one day, but we got to get it through COVID is the approach we're taking right now.
Yeah, bundle up, I guess, is the message for our ridership. And last question, just on the brake default issue, what's your confidence level on that and how that's going?
Troy, can you talk to that, please?
Yeah, there's two potential items there. There's the wheel flat that were related to the brakes. I think that's the one you're referring to. Mm-hmm. We've seen some very, very positive results since they've done those updates over the summer. And that was directly the reason why we needed some of those shutdowns, is because they needed to update every piece of equipment in every vehicle at once. So we've been able to do that. And, as I said, it's not perfect right now, but we are seeing a lot less of those issues that were creeping up. And, but the test for us is we need to see what winter holds, right? So we've done well through the summer. We're knock on wood, we're doing well through the fall so far, but we need to see it in all seasons. So, very encouraged about the results right now. RTG is confident that they've addressed it. And right now I just want to make sure we continue that through the winter season.
Great. Well, whether it was lawyers or a better management at RTM or more collaboration, whatever's happening, please keep it up. And thank you for all your work.
Thank you, Councillor Tierney. Next up is Vice Chair Cloutier, please.
Thank you, Chair. Merci beaucoup. And thank you, John and Troy and Pat, for your presentation. Three subjects I want to touch on: COVID, RTG, RTM, and PARA. First of all, on COVID, thank you to the 3,300 men and women at OC Transpo for your work since the end of March in keeping our city going. Any frontline workers that need to continue to go to hospitals, to some retail outlets, thank you. We had a lot of memos with respect to the sickness, and that has impacted some of your colleagues, and I'm very sorry about that. And I hope they all recover well and completely and quickly. I don't have a question, but I appreciate the relationship with the union representatives and their input in how to continue efficient, effective operations, and how to keep employees safe. It's very important. There's no service without healthy men and women. On COVID, mask wearing, can you give us an update on percentage, any difficulties? You said there was going to be a blitz. Masks are mandatory. We focus on education. Could you just give us an update on that? Because it is one in an environment where there can be no physical distancing, and some buses are at such a capacity where there's physical distancing is not possible, masks are very important. Can you give us an update on that?
Yes, Councillor or Vice Chair. I mentioned earlier, I think late last week, that I was hoping that Vancouver had some scientific approach to how they came up with their compliance rate, because I'm looking for that secret approach. It doesn't exist. There's spot checks that you can do. So what we're doing is we wanted to get through the school reopening And then probably the first or second week of October, and we're going to advertise it, we're going to be doing blitzes. We're not going to issue fines. What we're going to bring forward is we're going to issue warnings. But on top of that, we're also going to have some spare masks out there. We're also going to, I know Councillor Leeper asked about specific routes and times of days. He's bang on. We are seeing some trends in terms of bar locations, later hours, and so forth. We want to get to those and do targeted blitzes. You know, we're checking with bylaw and legal to make sure we can do written warnings. We believe we can. But we want to get the message out, and we look to everyone's support to say, because you'll get complaints. I guarantee you someone's going to say, nasty OC transpo came to me and asked me to wear a mask, and we'll have the proper dialogue about whether they can or can't. We totally understand that. But there are some routes that are problematic. We're seeing some trends through our control center and so forth, and we got to get to them. So I just ask for everyone's support. We'll roll out a communication plan to you so that you have all the tools and know what our plan is. But it's going to be very open and transparent. We're going to tell everybody. We're going to get out there and get the message out. And if counselors have ideas or suggestions they want us to consider, please send them to us, and we'll put them in the idea hopper for thoughts.
Thank you for that update. With respect to operations, what does, you referred to 80%, 88%, 97%, 98%. What is that? Is that kilometers? Is that time up? Is that activities? What is that 97, 98%?
I'm going to ask Troy to respond, but before I turn it to him, what I want everybody to know is that the numbers that we're bringing forward to you come from an international best practice in terms of what railroads of the same volume customer base perform at and what they're striving for. And Pat, when he brings his report to the Transit Commission on metrics, both bus, para, and rail, we'll have really good discussions in that regard. But Troy, in terms of what that number represents, can you please speak to that?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, the percentage of service delivered, so when I say 97% of the service delivered, in terms of the kilometers that have been scheduled, that could also be transferred, and we've done the math. You know, the percentages come out to very, very similar. You could also look at it as in terms of number of trips completed. But we wanted to go with kilometers because there has been, you know, there's times where, you know, you have to pull a vehicle off and you enter a vehicle in halfway through the line. So we felt kilometers delivered was the most accurate number to provide. So it's based on planned service kilometers. And how well we did at achieving those planned service kilometers.
Okay, thank you. At 98%, does RTG get penalized? And my real question is, how does that impact our customer service? How does the customer feel at 98% service? And does RTG get paid? Mr. Manconi, I think you're on mute.
I'm going to get Troy to walk you through. There are heavy hits and penalties to RTG when they don't perform, particularly during the peak, which has the biggest impact. There's also what are called station events, system events, or escalators being down. And so those are lesser penalties, but they all add up. But if they don't perform well in the morning and afternoon peak, they feel it on their payment. Troy, can you give a quick synopsis of that, please?
Mr. Chair, that's correct, John. You know, they there's targets for both the peak periods as well as for the overall day. So, you know, 98% service delivered, anything above that 97%, but, you know, obviously the closer to 100%, the better. You know, with 98%, 99%, there's generally sort of minimal impact to our customers. Customers may have experienced maybe a gap in between trains or a short disruption of a few minutes, but you're not having those major events where you're seeing the backlog of people in the stations, those sorts of things. So, but they do get, there are criteria for both the AM and PM peak period, as well as the aggregate for the entire day. But, you know, as Mr. Manconi indicated, there's a ream of other sort of performance metrics when it comes to escalator and elevator uptime, response time to rectify non-safety critical issues. Obviously, safety critical issues need to be addressed ASAP. So I have a group of employees that are looking at all those things, and we assess, assessing essentially quality failures or performance failures, both on, the kilometers delivered throughout the day, system events, which John has indicated, which, would be isolated to the peak periods, as well as all the quality events that can be vehicles, stations, track infrastructure, and even includes things like there's documentation that they need to provide us upon our request, and if we don't receive that documentation in time, in accordance with the timeline stipulated, there's even penalties there associated as well.
Okay, thank you. Lots of change since March. The legal issue, the notice of default, COVID. What is the status of our legal options? Is it ongoing?
So, Vice Chair, I'll be cautious here. I can tell you that they're still in default. And in terms of the legal update, we'll report that through FEDCO in terms of those in-camera sessions that we've had. But the last update that you received is the most current. Like we've signaled, they have to climb themselves out of default. So they have to have good performing months, and they're incentivized to do that, obviously, because with that comes money.
Okay. The substance of my question with respect to operations is that I believe at the end of March, you described the plan as not being, I don't remember the word, comprehensive or holistic. They had the supplier, RTG, didn't have the view, the customer service, and as Councillor Tierney suggested, and in your answer, looks like the relationship has changed, and the new management is a little bit more proactive, and there's better interaction. Their new plan and their methodology, would you describe it as more holistic, or I don't remember the term you used, customer focused, comprehensive, as some of the with
no
with
I no I know what you're talking
the
about end,
the objective
yeah no they you're right. They resubmitted, you'll recall, because we rejected their original plan. They resubmitted, and look, a plan is a plan, it's a document, it's what you do with the plan, and hence my opening comments. There are no debates about what needs to be fixed. I don't have any discussion any longer about does the track need to be addressed, the catenary, to what scope and scale? Nicholas Trujan, who's in charge of the concession, clearly laid out to me, he says, good performance in accordance with the PA gets their payment, and that's what he's chasing. And he understands that with good performance equals happy customers equals a payment. And it's as simple as that. And so, I was very candid in my opening comments that we're not debating about, do they need more resources and so forth. They know the mission, they got to get on it, and they've been on it, and the dividend comes to you and to our customers. You get less complaints, and our customers are more satisfied. So you're quite right, Vice Chair. There was a lot of bantering back and forth and so forth. Look, the lawyers will always have their debate, and we've always said there'll be a long discussion, and that'll get drawn out as lawyers do their thing. Our focus was on getting you the service that our customers and you deserve. And that's what RTG and RTM are committed to right now. The legal stuff will sort itself out.
Okay, thank you. Chris or Chair Hubley, let me know. Make sure you give me a 1-minute notice because I have some questions about paratranspo. One of the elements as we enter into winter is the switches. Can you give us an update? And new materials for the switches are important. Can you give us an update with respect to the natural gas or the source fuel for those new switches?
So the work is scheduled to go. The parts are arriving, and more importantly, Enbridge. I want to do a thank you to them. Enbridge at the executive level and at the operational level have been phenomenal. They're fast tracking a lot of our requests and working with us in partnership. So that's for the gas heaters, but equally important are the electrical upgrades. And so the sequencing of work is RTG has done it right. Troy is working with them around the clock to do some extended shutdowns if they need it. But the priority for them is to get in there and get that done. and they're doing the right thing. They're waiting for all the parts to be here, and then they go out and they roll and they knock them off, both the gas and the electrical. So they're in good shape there also.
Okay, thank you. Pat, thanks for the update on paratranspo, an important part of the service we provide to our customers and to all OC Transpo customers, and particularly during COVID. During COVID, have we been able to fulfill, I recognize demand has been lower, have we been able to fulfill 100% of the trip requests during the pandemic for para?
I believe it's been 100%. If there's been any amount under 100%, it's been very, very rare. I believe it's been 100%.
Thank you. At the June 1st Transit Commission, you said that trips were being limited to one customer per trip, and as long as ridership levels remained low. And what is the load currently on various vehicles, cabs, para vehicles, number of customers per trip? Can you give us an update?
The global number I have for you is that trip requests are now at about 50% of normal levels on paratranspo. Service is being provided according to demand, as we just talked about. Most people are being, everyone's being accommodated. Most people are being accommodated, with them being the only person on the vehicle. As we climb past 50%, closer to 100%, there will be more instances where people will be sharing a vehicle, as they would have previously, and the likelihood, right now very small, will start to rise of people who will be asked to reschedule their trip to another time, or where we won't be able to fulfill their particular request. But we're still doing very well at 50%.
Is rescheduling, is that being done at the booking time of booking, or is that being done at the time of the ride of the service request?
So right now it's not happening at all. When we return to normal, we would return to normal procedures, which are, when someone calls and says, I would like a trip at 2:45, we might say, we don't have any capacity for you right then. Could you travel half an hour earlier, half an hour later? And they will respond to whether they can or whether they'll make other arrangements. As we move into 2021, by that point, we will have our online system that will allow people to do that more interactively than they can right now.
I'll ask a question about that in a minute. Just the nature of paratranspo customer needs, some can't wear a mask, medical exemptions. Do passengers disclose this in the booking process so that there aren't any other customers on that scheduled trip if we need to double up?
I'm sorry, I don't have that particular information. I can look into it and get back to you directly.
I'd appreciate it appreciate that information. You touched a little bit on the...
Councillor, hold on a second. We just get a time check from Chris. A little while ago, he was saying 1:28, so I'm sure you're into your last...
30 seconds.
Chris, can you...
I have 30 seconds.
Okay, 30 seconds, Councillor.
Thank you very much, Chair and Chris. Pat, can you give us an update on the web form? The number of people that are using the web form and the interaction with the customer working group as we move towards the full implementation of the online service. You said the pilot project by the end of 2020. Can you tell us a little bit about the work of the customer working group?
Sure. The web form continues to be used. We're right now at about 100 trip requests a week on the web form, which represents about 4% of all of the trip requests that are coming in, the rest coming in by phone. That is lower right now, quite possibly because we're not having congestion on the phone lines right now. Anyone who's calling is getting through. The work with the customer working group has been continuing. Of course, we had to adapt that to not be face-to-face in-person meetings. And therefore, there's, you know, obvious limitations just like today on how people are able to communicate with each other. But that customer working group is continuing to help us considerably as we move along with the online services project. We continue to meet with them every few weeks, and that work continues. We're experiencing some workforce availability that's just slowing the work, but not a marked delay or anything like that. So we're continuing to be on track for the full online system, and the current online services, the web form, is working quite well for those people who are using it right now.
Okay, thank you. And just a full pilot by the end of 2020 and roll out hopefully early in 2021. Is that still the schedule?
That is still what we expect, yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Next up is Commissioner Wright Gilbert, please.
Morning, everyone. I just want to start by complimenting OC Transpo on the latest additions to their social media team. The responses to customers have been timely, helpful, funny, and above all, human. So I'm very pleased to see this change, and I hope that this tone and this responsiveness continues. So I just want to compliment you on your new hires. They're very funny. So I have quite a few questions, so I'll probably have to come back around for another round. So fair warning, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. As you know, large employers in the city, for example, Shopify, the Federal Public Service, and others are going to be working from home for the foreseeable future. Has OC Transpo done any foresight exercises with respect to ongoing reduced ridership and revenue streams?
Yes, we have, Chair. We're members of both the APTA Task Force and the CUTA Task Force. So one's American-based, or North American-based, and one's Canadian-based. And there's a lot of dialogue going on about what the future holds. And the challenge right now is, what does ridership look like? Some people are spending an awful lot of time trying to crystal ball and guess what ridership's going to look like. Our focus, and I've led the pack in this regard, and I've got a lot of other CEOs from other jurisdictions, TTC and so forth, agreeing with the principles. And the principles are transform your service, so improve even better. That's why the credit card open payment stuff is so important. Continue to build, stage two continues. That's an important trunk line forever for the city and so forth. And plan for future pandemics in terms of how you respond or crises and so forth. The other big theme is avoid any sudden moves. And you don't know what you don't know. And right now, nobody knows where we're trending in terms of ridership. We know the following: the federal government employees, they're not coming back this year. And when they do come back in the new year, if they do come back, it won't be at the 100% mark as before. That's what they're signaling. The universities are the same and so forth. But when they do come back, whether it's in small chunks or in larger chunks, we want to be providing great service, convenience, safe service, all those important things. And within that comes the how do we fund the gap that we've done? And, I'm going to give Wendy, our treasurer, great credit. Both her and I have been working with CUTA. She's been working with the Treasurer's Association, the mayor, the chair, and others have been working at the political level. Want to thank the federal government and the province for their funding. They're funding 92% of the gap to the end of September that we're facing. But what's important through all this is that transit has proven that it is vital for urban centers to continue to function even during pandemics. We never stopped. OC Transpo took a lot of criticism for not laying people off, and it was absolutely the right decision because now other agencies are struggling to get back up to 100% service. So I say that because one of the things is no sudden moves, because nobody can give you the playbook as to what's coming. And so the focus is safe, reliable, dependable service, all modes, para, bus, rail. Continue with our expansion program. Look at alternate revenue streams. Commissioner raised a motion on advertising stream. We're bringing that back to you. Don't know what that will entail, but everything's on the table, and including strategic partnerships and the ability to make it more convenient for the customer to ride the service. So the long answer is there is no silver bullet that's going to fix all this, nor does anybody know what we're chasing. But the fundamentals remain the same. Safe, reliable, dependable service is the perspective we have. Take the long view, be very open to innovation. You know, scooters, I do run the whole transportation services department, and I launched, and I thank Councillor Turney and Councillor Leeper and Councillor McKenney, big fans of the scooter program. Why? First mile, last mile. And I can tell you, during COVID, there were some people that were calling me crazy for pushing that through. 60,000 rides in July. Those are critical pieces of the solution long-term to how you close that first mile, last mile. Are there challenges with scooters? Absolutely. But we'll overcome them. The open payment, all those things. What we've done with our para customers, those are all examples of what we need to focus on. And the reason I'm emphasizing that is everybody's emphasizing on funding and what that ridership number will be. And I can guarantee you, nobody in North America can tell you what that ridership forecast looks like. I asked Pat for that graph in the presentation for a reason. There is nobody that can tell you what that trend line is going to look like. There's too many variables. So focus on what all of you have talked to me about. Outstanding safe service, convenience, accelerate the para stuff, accelerate the reliability, all those pieces.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to hear that you're participating in foresight exercises. I think those are incredibly important for, you know, major organizations and for the city to participate in. I'm wondering who is paying for the independent reviewers that have been brought in to review the rectification work for RTM?
Everything under the default notice gets covered by our billing back to RTG. So the theme remains the same. We're in a situation because they did not perform. Our legal position is those bills are sliding over and we're tracking every nickel, and that gets handed over to them, including, by the way, things such as when we did those shutdowns that Troy talked about and we had to add bus service on the weekend. I can tell you that's getting deducted from their payments. And most of them, they're understanding and agreeing. Some of them, they're not, and they will contest because they've got their legal team that wants to challenge certain things. But all of that gets tracked, and it's being deducted off of their payments and or being held back, combination thereof.
Okay, thank you. Mentioned in the presentation were the switch heaters, which obviously caused a lot of consternation for riders, but especially East End riders, such as myself, last winter, that they're one of the seven areas of focus as part of the rectification plan. What is the expected date of completion for the work on the three switch heaters that need to be changed over to gas heaters?
Yeah, no, as Troy mentioned in his presentation, the work is underway. We don't have a firm date as to when it'll get completed, but we'll certainly let everybody know.
Are we, I hate to use this word because we're overusing it, hopeful about the work being done prior to the first snowfall?
I have no concerns on the switch heaters based on what I've seen, heard, and the work that Troy has done with them in terms, we're literally planning which hours of the day and what days we're going to be doing the work. That's to give you some comfort, Commissioner. That's what we're down to. And remembering that we don't just go by what they're telling us. We have boots on the ground monitoring. Troy's staff takes a look at all, and we coordinate with them. So we're literally down to what day of the month are we going to be doing this in October, and what will that look like, and how much work time do they need?
Okay. You mentioned that only the three East End switches are being switched to gas heaters, and the rest of them are being upgraded. They'll remain electric heaters and be upgraded. Why are we not just switching all of the heaters to gas, regardless of if we have no issues with the other heaters right now?
So it's a combination of things. There's many perspectives on a gas heater and electric heater. Neither one is good and neither one is bad. They can perform well. The issue is, where are they configured? Location? Do you have gas accessible? What is the blower configuration on the track and so forth, as Troy's talked about? And there's risk with gas. I'm gonna warn you. They do go out. I know everybody says nothing happens on the Trillium line, but we've had the gas heaters conk out in heavy winds. So you have to have staff out there monitoring and relight the pilot and so forth. There's pluses and minuses to both. What we like about their plan is, in the East End, those locations were problematic. There is gas available to them. They're getting the lines there. They're just sorting out the logistics on that. On top of that, they extended the duct heater banks, and they proactively took our idea, which we shared with them in terms of the electrical extension onto the rail lines. So they're looking at it holistically. And so, again, we will monitor. And on top of that, Troy and their team have a contingency plan on top of those heaters to monitor them and make sure that there's no issues, including having staff there. So they'll be all over it.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm really hopeful that that makes a difference for this winter. So on slide 21 of the presentation, it states that, quote, since September 8th, RTG has consistently met the required commitment, putting 15 trains in service on line one during the morning peak periods, end quote. Can you clarify what you mean by consistently? Does this mean every single day, or are there days when they have not provided 15?
Every day, and you'll recall, we asked for a commitment from them as to when they would see 15 trains as part of the rectification plan, and they came back and we reported out to you that it was September 8th. In addition to that, they put out 15 trains every day in August, save and except 3 days in the morning, which was a joint decision by us and Troy's staff and their staff not to deploy on those 3 days because they were seeing some issues on the train. And rather than take a risk, they didn't do that, which we will do in the future. If there's a train that we believe is on risk, that's what you do. You don't put it out on the main line. But every day since September 8th, they've been meeting their 15 trains. And reminder, they have the spares also.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I just wanted to make sure that we were being clear on what consistently meant. So you Mr. McKinney, you referred to, quote, quick best-in-class response to issues occurring on the line in opening remarks. So, for example, on September 4th, a brake fault occurred and it took nearly an hour to resolve. So how long on average does a brake fault take to resolve?
Well, Commissioner, I think we got to be careful of what information we have out there. I don't know who's giving you that it took an hour to resolve. That's not
customer facing. That's actually based on the OC Transpo Twitter account when they tweeted the actual incident happening, which was actually 15 minutes past when the incident happened, based on customer tweets saying that it had happened. And then when it actually had been resolved, was again tweeted out by OC Transpo about 10 minutes after it had actually been resolved. And I'll owe that to bureaucracy and whatnot. So this is information from your own Twitter account.
Yes, and we're doing what we had committed to say, that we're going to give live updates on that. However, the important part is what's concerning is we didn't have passengers stranded for an hour. It's like last night, we had that issue at Tunney's that I talked about. That train was tucked away for hours, and then we pulled it out, I believe it was just before midnight. And the issue on response is, when a train has an issue, you try within under 5 minutes to reset. And if it doesn't reset, you get it off the line or you tuck it away out of the way. And the fact that it took an hour, that's great. It took an hour to reset that brake. Sometimes they take longer, sometimes they take less time. But in the request that we've had is over-communicate to our customers, we did that. But I just want to be clear, we didn't have customers stranded or service shut down for an hour. And that's, I'm sharing that because that's been a bit of a trend in the past where, you know, people are adding up the tweet time and thinking that's the impact to customers.
It was minutes. That's not what I was saying. Yeah, I apologize for interrupting, but just to be clear, that's not what I was saying. What I was saying was I wanted to know sort of what would the average time for a brake fault to resolve. In this specific case, this brake fault was at Lion Station. And so as a result, customers were impacted for this hour, given that they had to get off a train and then possibly switch over to the other track to then get on another train. So I'm just saying there was a customer impact for that hour, and it would have a delay in their day having to get off the train, wait for the next one, and then go on. I'm not implying that there was an actual, they were sitting on the train for an hour, you know, boiling or freezing. I'm not being dramatic about it. I'm asking, you know, about these brake faults and why they continue to happen, and sort of what the average time is for their resolution.
No, I totally understand your question. And I got to correct you slightly. They don't continue to happen. They're not happening at the frequency that they were happening before, per Troy's response. And so, they got off the train. They would switch at line exactly like you described it. So to answer your question, it varies. Brake faults. It's this long or that long, an average reset time. It depends on the train configuration, the location, what exactly happened. Is it a single fault, multiple fault? What has been the response and so forth? And how far is the tech away from the train and so forth? So it varies is the short answer. But just to correct one thing, they're not happening on a regular basis. We've seen less and less brake faults, and that's for a bunch of reasons.
Okay, thank you. You mentioned that the O-Train Ambassadors, that program is ramping down, and we all understood that that was a temporary program that would that was kept on for longer because of the issues with the LRT. You mentioned that they will be replaced by station attendants. I have two questions on that. Will all station attendants be bilingual? And what can get me some details or provide me some details on what their slightly greater operational responsibilities will entail?
Certainly, Troy.
Yes, Mr. Chair, yes, all positions that we're recruiting for the station attendants will be bilingual. So that was a requirement for the job. So yes. With regards to your second question, obviously their primary role is there for provide customer service. If there's any issues on the line, they would help direct customers. But we also want them to either assist the operator or the supervisor. There may be some, you know, if there is, say, for example, a door issue and there's lots of people around, you know, the operator can focus on the door, and the station attendant, if they're in that area, they can help, you know, I use the term crowd control, but help people back. But we want that operator to, we want the station attendants to assist the supervisors and the operators in troubleshooting issues that can happen. And that links back to your previous question about response time. You know, there's a lot of issues that can occur on a day-to-day basis that our operators are trained to be able to troubleshoot and can rectify within a minute or two. Some it might take the operator a few more minutes because they have to walk to the other train. These are types of things that we'd get the station attendants to help out with as much as they can. But their primary role is the customer-facing function, communicate to customers, help direct them.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I just wanted to get a little bit more clarity on that. I only have two more questions, amazingly. Just really quickly, I've had several people ask me to confirm that the hand sanitizer that's being used in the stations is scent-free. I haven't been in the station since March, so I can't personally confirm that, but I assume that it is scent-free.
1 minute.
Yes, Mr. Chair, that is my understanding as well, but I will follow up and I'll confirm that for you following the meeting.
Thank you. That's important just because the city's own policy on a scent-free environment, so that's incredibly important. And my last question, not to raise an old issue, but is there any update as to the source of the odors at Parliament and Rideau stations?
Troy?
Mr. Chair, with regards to the odor at Rideau Center Station specifically, it was attributed to the water that was leaking, and they've been undertaking the injection grouting to stop those leaks. So that was a definitive result from the inspections, or I'm not sure the correct term, but the work that we had done. With regards to Parliament Station, unfortunately that one still remains a bit of a mystery. Right now, we're not experiencing that odor, but if you believe that it might be, there might be some triggers or some seasonal aspects to it. But nothing definitive on the Parliament Station, but Rideau Station, we could say fairly confidently that it was related to the water, and RTG took steps during those shutdowns as well to to stop that from happening, and we've seen an improvement.
Excellent. I guess time will tell. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Those are actually all of my questions.
That's great. Thank you, Commissioner Wright-Gilbert. Next up is Councillor Kavanaugh, please.
Hi there. And thank you for the update and the report, and thank you for my fellow commissioners for their questions. Following up on in terms of the fact that we're an essential service, and we're talking about the revenue stream being, it was pretty scary there, running a whole bunch of buses, full complement at first, with no ridership. Should we be looking, since everything's on the table, at moving away from a fare revenue system and move to more of a tax-based system if we're considering it essential service?
So Chair, that's a big policy discussion that I would recommend. If you want to go down that road, you should consider that as part of budget and or the long-range financial plan. It's a great question. Look, LA just struck a task force to look at whether or not they should go that model. I know that I think it was Minneapolis did the same. Here's the thing. There's a few jurisdictions that have done that. The fare box recovery in those cities, so I'll take Minneapolis, I think they recover something like $17 million. That's it. So they're subsidizing at like 83, 90%, very, very high percentages. And for those that have moved to that, that gap to close that is very, it's very, very easy. You're at that 50% mark. So of the $500 million that you spend on transit, you're recovering almost half of that. And those are very, very large, either, you know, the three levers, tax increases, transit levy, or service. Those are your three options. And so you would have a massive funding challenge before you. I'm not stating whether it's a good or bad thing. I'm just, that's all a policy discussion that council would need to consider. So I just wanted to put that out there, Councillor, because it's a very good question. There are some jurisdictions that are looking at, do they move to no fare payment? And the ones that have done that, LA just recently announced that. I think they're at max 30% fare recovery or even less. And so their gap is much, much smaller than ours. Our approach on that stuff is that the equity inclusion lens is now even stronger and an important critical element, because what we saw through COVID, where I'm trying to pull the data out, is those that are less less fortunate than many of us had the biggest impact and depended on transit the most. So my advice would be, how do we push the equity inclusion lens even further? And if there are any consideration in terms of that space, that's that would be a top priority to make sure those people that really need it for essential commutes, livelihood, health, and all that, make sure that we're taking them behind, taking care of them, and don't leave anybody behind. Because the stats are going to start rolling in as to who was greatly impacted through the COVID crises.
Oh, I agree, and that's what we should look at and think about expanding those programs so that. Because as we know, the unemployment rate has risen. And for those that do get jobs, unfortunately, they're going to be at the lower end of the scale. And we're going to need to look at expanding our special passes for those on lower incomes. So I think that those are things that we have to think about in, as COVID continues. I think that that's a big factor. And we'll have to have a discussion about that, because we can't leave people deserted. As you said, that's why we ran a full system while the COVID was on. We didn't let go of it because we knew those are the ones that need it the most. So and if there's more people in need, we'll have to look at that. So I appreciate that. And yes, it's a bigger question than just here, but it starts the conversation. In terms of COVID, one of the things that's being done at STO is just having arrows on the floor of the buses or whatever, so that people just go one direction, just like supermarkets. Are we doing that at all? I don't know if I missed that in the presentation.
No, we're not doing anything significant in terms of flow. Our preference was to go with the engineered solution on, and you know, again, our team, all these great senior leaders here, they don't brag enough. Jim Greer, again, to his fleet team, we increased the airflow on our vehicles. That came from an employee suggestion in our stations and so forth. We're looking at all that. We're going to be pushing out some messaging on our vehicles do air exchange in the light rail vehicles. We're going to get that out to you and so forth. The arrows and all those things, I think that novelty is wearing thin on people. And I think particularly when you're in a hurry and so forth, it's not that effective as our approach. So masks, engineered solutions, lots of communications. And again, we're getting through the school crunch, and then we're going to start repeating all our key messages to staff as our approach, counselor. But if there's any particular things that are innovative that you want us to look at, again, everything's on the table. We've got a task force that looks at things and turns them around really quickly. One thing we will be doing is I've asked for additional signage about masks being mandatory in the system. Again, our friends at TransLink are doing a phenomenal job. Every space that's available, they're putting up decals to remind people about masks.
Okay. What about just on buses, though? Just to ensure that, I mean, it's supposed to be that way, that you get on at the front and you go to the back. But there's always somebody who's going to try and get off on the front, and it just causes more back and forth. Can we even just recommend it for that, just for the buses? Not necessarily.
I think that's great. We'll take that away. I think an enforcement message or a reminder message that go through the back door is good. Uh-huh. We'll add that to the mix.
Okay, that's great. Thank you. I've been reading about bird collisions. This is the time of year, and they've been running into the stations. Is there something being done about that in terms of prevention? This is the time of year that birds are migrating, and unfortunately they still hit glass, and a lot of them are our stations. Are we working on a solution on that?
Counselor, I'll have to pull out. I know we responded to that in the past. I can't remember if it was yourself or somebody else that inquired, or perhaps it was Counselor McKinney, but I know we've done some vegetation planning and so forth, and I'll certainly look at that. And I just got to check with Michael. I think we're doing some stuff on stage two also. I'll have to double check and get back to you.
Okay. Yes. And especially for stage two, I would really like to be able to tell people, being as we've got probably seven stations in our area. In terms of the service, we talked about the data sharing with apps on bus arrivals. How's that going?
I'm going to have to ask Pat to give us an update.
Thanks, John. Mr. Chair, I can say that we have moved all of the information we're feeding to the independent apps to a more recent, a more modern interface. They call it an API. There is still more coming up in the next few months on the OC Transpo end of it as we change our old vehicle location system, which is home built and quite old, over to the new commercially supported one with all the modern features. That's a project which continues. So step by step, we're moving along that path.
Do we have a time frame of when we can announce to the public that these are available?
When we have that, we will certainly share the information with you and with our customers. We can't yet say with confidence when that will happen, because it's implementing a new system is one of many things requires staff attention, and where that attention has been given more recently to responding to COVID and to improving the reliability of train operation. So it continues to be on our work plan, but it isn't done yet.
Okay, thank you. One thing that we're going to face this winter is it's not just the reliability of the train service, but it's always about the connectivity of getting to the to bus stops, et cetera. One of the things that our area is going to face is we're actually going to have some bus stops missing. I just had a meeting with Stage 2 and OC, and thanks, Pat, for coming out to talk to people about the fact that routes are going to have to get changed because of the closeness, proximity to the Stage 2 construction. And we're losing a few bus stops temporarily, well, for a couple of years. But since people have to walk a little further, snow clearance is going to be really, really important. I'd like to tell them that they can rely on snow clearance, even if they have to walk to the next bus stop, because their regular bus stop is not going to be there for a bit. These are highly used ones. And, you know, there's no way around it. The construction is right there and right on Byron, et cetera. So like to hear a commitment about working with Public Works on snow clearing to get to buses.
Councillor, just to re-echo what you and I talked about, you've been crystal clear with me. As you know, you and I are going for a bike ride in your ward. You're going to show me all that stuff. There's a reason for that because I'm coming back. Don't tell Councillor Leeper. He's going to ask me for a bike ride also.
No, he'll want to go on a scooter.
But the reason for that is I'm going to see it firsthand. Kevin Wiley and I are great partners, and I will assure you, you have one of the biggest, just so everyone knows, Councillor Kavanaugh has the biggest impact right now to state because of Stage 2 construction. It'll be great when it's done, but her neighborhood is going through a lot of challenges and we've had some bumps in the road. Michael, Pat, my team, everybody is doing a full court press to get through some of those bumps. And the movement of bus stops is affecting a lot of people there. So we'll hopefully the weather holds up and we'll go for our bike ride. And I'm going to be assuring you that we will get good enhanced snow clearing for those alternate routes.
I appreciate it. And I appreciate the assistance of your team, Michael Morgan, Damon, the STO ones, but also Pat and crew. So thank you. That's it.
Thank you, Councillor Kavanaugh. Appreciate your questions. Next up is Councillor Brockington.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning again. Mr. Scrimger, what is the frequency of specific bus route audits for reliability?
Daily.
Okay, so you have daily information on the bus routes and OC Transpo on reliability. So you don't have to wait every quarter, every month.
It's a continuous process. Our Transit Control Center is monitoring the on-time performance of every bus and train across the entire system at all times.
Okay, that's good to know. The switches that are being fixed in the East End, Mr. Charter detailed parts are coming by the end of September. Even locations not in the East End are going to be addressed. How do we again test this in the autumn without the snow and ice conditions to assure ourselves that the problem has actually been fixed?
The true test comes with a great question. The true test comes with the weather, but there is a testing regime for the electrical connections, the gas connections, the blowers, and so forth. They have thermal testing equipment that they test the temperature and so forth and the airflow. But on top of that, speaks to my point, Councillor. They've got a redundancy plan. They're going to have personnel there, and Troy is giving them extra access points so they don't have to drive further to get to these locations and so forth. And that's across the system.
But we'll truly know once we have a stormy day and whether or not the switches work. That will be the true test.
Well, except when we get frost too, it is very evident. And if ever you want to see it, I'll take you out there. Just look over the Tunney's Bridge as an example. You can see the heat pattern of those units. You'll see, you know, swaths of square meters being heated. It's instant. When you have a cold night, those things will activate. And you'll see them because it's not just snow. It's also ice and frost buildup that you don't want.
Do we have the same track conditions on the Trillium line than we do on the Confed line as far as switches? Or is it totally different technology? And the reason I ask is we traditionally have not had the same number of issues on the Trillium line for switches. We have had some, but certainly not like what we've seen on Confed line. So how are they different?
So it's different rail stock, and I'll get Troy to talk to that if you like. So gauge and so forth, but also a different switch configurations, crossovers and so forth. And the Trillium line, the existing line, it's pretty straightforward. The real movements are at those passing tracks.
Yeah.
And it's in a deep, it's not exposed to the elements. That's the other thing. So you'll get snow, but it's the blowing snow and the ice buildup that's very problematic. So the existing Trillium is fairly sheltered. You'll see more switch issues or switch configurations when it gets extended. But it's different gauge. They did have gas blowers there. Like I said, they have had issues with them. It's just the response time and so forth to when they do have issue. And less frequency. The Trillium line is less intense in terms of frequency.
Mr. Scrimshire, do you have ridership data numbers for R2?
We are collecting ridership data from all our buses, and we will be building up knowledge as the buses that are equipped with counters cycle over the Line 2 replacement buses. We, in particular, will be looking at how are we doing since September, when some students are on campus, and we'll be watching that over a couple months to see if there's any patterns building up.
Okay, but since R2 went into service, do you have data? I mean, where am I going with this? It's a long route. I express concerns about running this route. My observations has been ridership has been very low. I'm sure there are times when people have taken it, but I'm questioning the expense to run this parallel route when the demand just isn't there.
Certainly demand is lower especially with Carleton University running at lower levels. And, we're managing it. We haven't had to add as much additional service as we were ready to add in this fall. Some of those resources are being used instead to handle the different hours that the high schools are attending. So those resources that would have been there haven't needed to be assigned there, but it remains an important trunk rapid transit line on our network. And because the travel times are longer than they would be with the train in place, one way to keep the customer experience better than it would be otherwise is to keep the departures fairly frequent from the terminal.
Do we know the percentage of riders we've lost who have not taken UPass this semester and what that equals in revenues?
We know the number of UPasses we have sold, and we can compare that to budget. If that answers the question.
Yeah. Can I get that data at some point?
I think so. I'll talk to our colleagues in finance and find out. Usually the appropriate time to do that is not quite this early in September, as sometimes there's some back and forth as students arrange their travel needs through the month of September, but I'll find out when's the best time to do that and whether that's easy to share.
Okay, thank you. And just to Mr. Manconi made a point earlier on about some criticism about staffing levels being maintained through the pandemic the last 6 months. What I would like to see is a transit system that I think we all agree we want to maintain consistency and reliability. There's no dispute there at all. But we need to provide a service that matches demand. And I think that as we're going into the 2021 budget, which no one's really discussed yet today, and the significant revenue shortfalls that we're going to be facing, we need to offer service that matches the demand that's out there. And if Mr. Scrimger says we're down 72% in ridership, then there has to be a reflection in the service that we provide. And that is the monkey in the room or the elephant in the room about how 6 weeks from now, when the draft budget is released, how is that going to be reflected in that? So that is a significant thing we have to wrestle. The last thing I'd just like to ask And I don't expect an answer today, but Mr. Manconi, if you could just agree to this and just provide the commission an answer in writing, is I'd like to see how, when phase two is completely constructed and ready to be independently assessed before we take the keys, I would like to know, based on what we did for phase one, how our assessment is going to change to ensure it's broader, more in depth, greater ability to find problems, find issues. Because all of the issues that have been working since revenue service started were not identified by our independent analyst or team of analysts that we had. So I'd like to know, how can we take lessons learned from that independent review or test of phase one and apply it when the time comes, before we accept the keys, to phase two? It's just, how can we have a broader test review to make sure those issues are ironed out? And again, I don't expect Mr. Manconi to be able to answer that today, but I would like to have a sense going forward that we have a plan. So thank you, Chair.
Certainly, Chair, I can respond to that, and I'll comment on the previous comment also. So absolutely, Councillor, we can give you that, and we'll do that under the umbrella of FEDCO committee, because that's where the stage two mandate rests.
Sure.
And I can tell you that already we've changed how we do assessments and a proactive approach to schedule monitoring and adherence and so forth. And with respect to the service matching demand, that's a very important policy discussion you put out there, and it fits into the future budgets. Just to give you order of magnitude, if we needed to go in that direction, we're talking of double-digit service cuts to across the board. So right now, what we've done is we have put out all the service we can so that there is as much social space distancing as possible and so forth. But if the direction in the future budgets is that if federal funding and provincial funding dries up, and there's a possibility of that, you've heard the city manager speak loud and clearly about service reviews. But I just caution you in that regard. This is not about tweaking. This is about, if we're into chasing $50, $60, $70, $80 million worth of service, those are massive cuts across the board. So that direction of match demand to service, it's a tricky, tricky slope to go down. And then if you do rebound back, what do you do to catch up once the buses and the operators are laid off and so forth?
Yeah, so, I want to be clear. I'm not suggesting we cut 72%, but the number of empty buses I consistently see across the city is a non-starter for taxpayers. There has to be a better way for us to control our costs.
Councillor, I'm not going to debate that with you. If you want us, because I'm accountable for service levels at this is the GM. If you want me to start reducing service across the board to get rid of those, what you see call empty buses, get council to move a motion and give me that direction. But it'll take up to a year to get those savings driven out, because you got to lay people off and get rid of buses and bus routes and so forth.
What I want to see is a plan to control our costs. It could be we use less toilet paper in our washrooms. The issue is, and that's just an extreme example, the issue is, my concern is, going into the 2021 budget, we are going to have a major revenue shortfall. And the question is, if we can't rely on provincial and federal money, as you allude to, what is our plan?
That's coming.
What is our plan?
That's coming, and the budget forecast that you see today is because we have done spending freezes and efficiencies and so forth to contain costs.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Brockin. The next up is Councillor Leeper, please. Are you there, Jeff? You're still on mute, buddy.
Stupid two screens, finding the mute button. John, I have a fairly simple request of you. I roll a variety of devices onto the train, and I rely on the elevators. I know a lot of people right now are trying to wave people through. They're trying to be single passengers in the elevator. I know that I do. If somebody else is waiting, I'll wave someone through and wait for the next one. My impression is that the elevators are not working as frequently. Like both elevators, say at Tunney's Pasture, are not always both working at the same time. Could we get an update from you on elevator and escalator reliability and what that has been?
Absolutely. I thought we issued that already, but we'll dust it off and update it. But more importantly, if you're telling me there's inconsistency at Tunney's, Troy will be all over that today. And we'll check across. Great point. The elevators are being used more because there is a lot of people with other devices that they're using for that last first mile.
Yeah, and they are trying to keep their distance, or a lot of people are trying to keep their distance, which is obviously something we want to continue to encourage. And then, John, I would just say the folks who are taking the bus right now are the folks who we're relying to work in our grocery stores, in our restaurants, in our hospitals, in our doctor's offices. Let's continue to make sure that those people are not poorly served by our transit system. I could not support anything that makes transit even more difficult than it already is for our frontline workers in a variety of sectors in our economy. I very much appreciate that we have maintained our bus service the way it is today for the people who are ensuring that we can get through this pandemic with some sustainability. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Councillor Leeper. I believe the chair has left. Christopher is the next person, Commissioner Olson, according to your records.
That would be correct.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Olson, please.
Thank you. Thank you. And Mr. Manconi and your staff, just want to say congratulations to you and to RTM as well. You've used the last 6 months very productively and things look good going into the later fall and winter. Let's hope everything goes as well as we're expecting. Last week, you referred to the on the COVID. You referred to the mask non-compliance blitz as heavy education, which sounded a little ominous, kind of like when you hear the words heavy snowfall. And you've said today that it will involve warnings. Are there other elements of that blitz?
Visibility, communication. It's kind of like when OPS does their spot checks for drinking and driving. It's been proven that you tell people, you remind people of the rules, you tell them that you're going to be out there. And again, we still have some masks left over. We'll have a stock. If someone says, I forgot it, we'll say, okay, well, here's your warning, you know, whether it's verbal or written, and please wear it today because I know you need to get to where you need to get to. So it's a combination of communications, presence, tools, and visibility. And then, like I said, also additional signage across the board.
Okay. Is there any indication that the non-mask compliance that you've witnessed or been aware of, has that led to, do we know if it's led to any increase in the number of cases?
No, we don't have that data. What we do have is Ottawa Public Health is integrated with us, and through their confidential contact tracing, they would be letting us know if that was a contributing factor, and to date they have not. You heard Dr. Etches yesterday say, and I'll repeat it again, it appears that while I don't have all the specifics of it, I have just have the general summaries because I get those, is that, you know, what's occurring outside of work may be a contributing factor to that, to certainly some of our employees getting it. Because we put them on high alert that if there's something we're doing or we need to do more, we want to know about it. So it's not, to date, we're, you know, thank goodness there's nothing indicating that, transit is contributing, in any significant way based on what we hear from OPH.
Okay. Do you know if any cases in the city in general or among OC Transpo staff have actually been traced back to trains, buses, or stations, or any, I guess, OC Transpo facilities?
Again, we don't see the confidential reports because we're respecting everybody's privacy. What happens, though, is public health would let us know if there is a gap. So, for example, if there was a contributing factor at one of our facilities, the driver's lounges or something like that, they would let us know. What they have done very proactively is when we had that little spike a couple of weeks ago, they came back and they did visits with us through our staff facilities. And we had some cleanup we had to do, not physical cleaning, but enforcement of number of people in the lounges. We have a prayer room that we had to restrict the number of people in there, the wipe down pre and post use of the prayer room, those types of things. And then just recently, we proactively brought them into our control room because that's a closed environment with a lot of people. We're just doing our due diligence. So it's all about checking and proactively looking at your processes and sub-processes to make sure they're not contributing. So there's no red flags, thank goodness, currently.
Okay, and final question. Ottawa Public Health has identified different areas, wards of the city that are relative COVID hotspots. It's on their website. So Alta Vista, for example, Beacon Hill, Sevierville have much higher rates of COVID than other parts of the city, including, say, Kanata and Stittsville. Is there any move by OC Transpo with Ottawa Public Health to try to blitz those areas as well about more education, about masks, about other things?
It's a great question. Our task force is looking at it by routes, by neighborhoods and so forth. And any data that OPH gives us, again, everything we do in response to COVID, we always run it by our joint health and safety committees and our COVID relationship with public health.
Okay.
So we'll do exactly what you're suggesting.
Excellent. Thank you, Mr. McConey. That's it, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Olson. Mr. McConey, did you want to add something about the team before we go on to our next commissioner?
Yes, Chair, thank you. I know in our presentation we made some comments about root cause on the crack wheels. The lead investigator has already reached out both to myself and to the city manager. I just want to make sure we're absolutely clear to where we stand with the TSB investigation. The TSB has not signed off on anything on root cause. Their investigation is ongoing. What we've looked at and what we've concluded is we believe that is the root cause. But I want to give full public disclosure that the TSB investigation is continuing. They have not signed off on that, and it will be a while for them to do that. And so, again, I know that Mr. Johnson, who's the lead investigator, has some concerns about us publicly sharing that. And it's not ill intent in any way or to give a false sense of security. It is a robust process that we all have that we put forward on here. But I wanted to make sure that members of commission knew the TSB investigation is still ongoing.
Okay, thank you, Mr. McConey. Next up is Councillor Gower, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a point for my fellow councillors and commissioners. Turns out if you lose internet connection and you have your hand up, your hand goes down. So I thought it was on the list quite a bit earlier. Anyhow, Mr. Manconi, you touched on RTG paying attention to the macro and the micro, which is encouraging to hear, and the right approach. I've mentioned this at our commission before. I think sometimes we have some difficulty finding the right balance between macro and micro. I think right now we're very focused on micro or missing some of the bigger picture things about the future of transit in our city, which may or not be entirely within the purview of this commission. It's also FEDCO and council. But I wanted to just hone in on something with communications, appreciating that the last year has been very difficult with all of the issues with LRT and buses. Your approach has been to over-communicate, and we all appreciate the transparency. I think that there's a point, though, where that over-communication can become a bad thing. When the communication is happening through Twitter, we lack some context. It came up in one of the earlier commissioner's questions around, I think it was a brake fault that was brought up. Over-communication can be a problem if you happen to miss something, and then the public might think that you're hiding something or not being transparent. And the other one is, when you have a constant barrage of issues without context, you kind of lose the forest for the trees. I can only think, if we tweeted out every time there was a light standard broken in the city, it might create a very inaccurate view of how well our street lighting is working. And as we hopefully move towards a phase where issues aren't happening with such frequency, do you see a need, or are you, I just wonder if you could comment on how that communication might evolve. How do you give more context, or will it be as necessary to tweet out, whenever there's an animal on a track, for example?
No, that's a great question. So I think there's a couple of themes to my response. The first is no surprises to any member of council and members of commissions. And that's on the big things, you know, hence that long-winded memo that I wrote out about the payment. You remember when I, you know, had to come back and say, yeah, we did make a payment. Sorry, I thought it was, you know, known and so forth. I'm not going through another one of those episodes. In 31 years of my career, I take a great pride in making sure that you, the counselors, are always informed. And that memo, it's funny, I only had one counselor call me about it, but there's a lot in that memo, and it basically says, and it speaks exactly to what you're saying, counselor, I'm not going to be memoing you every time we make a payment to RTM. I finished that with, hey, we've told you where we are. You've had the confidential briefings on default. Steve Kanellakis is fully supportive that we're not going to be memoing council every time we make a payment to RTM, just like we don't memo you every time we make millions and millions of dollars of payments every day to other contractors. So that's part of the governance piece. On the service, it's under 5 minutes. Don't expect us to be telling you about an issue. And that's out broadly and so forth, because that's what the industry best practices are. And it's over 5 minutes, then you start to activate R1 and those types of things. And because otherwise we're just going to be chasing the wrong things and you will be bombarded with more work. And, you know, I know there's people that are listening in our radio channels as an example, and they're tweeting stuff out saying, oh, there's, you know, I was very upset last week when there was a very, very sensitive issue on the track and somehow it got out into the public domain. Well, I can tell you that was a mental health issue. And there's strict protocols to privacy and to caring and compassion and so forth. And here we were responding to media inquiries about what was going on the track, why we had to shut the system down and so forth. So it is that balance that we're looking for. But I understand and I respect the difficult journey you all have been through. And you have my commitment that I will inform you on the big things. I will give you updates. I will tell you if there's new issues that impact the service in a significant manner. But I wasn't joking earlier on. I'm not going to tell you about the raccoon that was at Pimisi today that had a customer taking a picture of it that may have impacted service for a few minutes. Because that doesn't help you at all. What helps you is knowing what the outcomes of that service are. Are they running at those performance indicators? That's why, you know, the 15 trains, at some point we got to stop talking about that, because that's not what train companies do. That's not what railroads do. They talk about headway service time, and it's coming in under 5 minutes, 3 minutes and 40 seconds, roughly, with 15 trains at peak. That's the performance target. You know, Councillor Brockington asked about performance and targets. That's what we need to be talking about. And more importantly, to give you the confidence on governance and are we meeting the mandate and so forth, is the report on performance management that needs to come back to you so that you have the information and you have all the levers to push and pull to hold us accountable, because it is your city. It's not my train. It's not my city. It's yours. And thank you for the question, because it's exhausting staff. And quite frankly, you know, I've heard updates about where are we on this project, where are we on that project. We're consuming a lot of staff chasing down some tactical information. But I get it. We need to rebuild that credibility. We need to rebuild that confidence. And we will. It's a phenomenal system, the first of its kind with no playbook. It's never been done anywhere in the world, and you've done it. And when that system runs well, it runs well. We've all seen the interviews. We've heard people commenting how great it is. But when it broke down last year, it was tough for a lot of people. Thank you for the question. It means a lot to me.
Thank you, Mr. Manconi. I had actually written down, I can't wait for the day when we can get to not talking about the number of trains in service, but talking about whether or not we're meeting our target headways. You mentioned performance management reporting. So I hope that over the course of this fall, we can get back on track for developing the regular reporting to the commission. But that's something I can speak with the chair about offline. Before I wrap up, I wanted to touch on something Councillor Kavanaugh had brought up around transit as a public service and how transit's funded in the city. And Councillor Kavanaugh, I'd be very happy to work with you and other councillors on setting up a task force to look at this. I think it's something we need to be doing. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Gower. And Mr. Manconia, I want to thank you for your honesty and your frankness in that reply that you just gave for Mr. Gower, because or Councillor Gower, in particular, dealing with that mental health issue last week, I know there was a lot of people very nervous about what was being said on social media during that episode. And so I thank you for bringing that up. And I know we're going to work with public health to get some guidelines on those issues to provide for councillors and citizen commissioners. So thank you for that. Councillor McKinney, you're up next.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, Councillor Gower, for letting me know I was off the list. I came back on. I also lost my connection. And if this was brought up while I had lost my connection, I just I'm going to assume that that raccoon was okay at Pimisi Station.
We're going to stay strategic. We're going to stay strategic. I don't know.
So thank you for the presentation today. This has been a difficult year. I've been one of the key critics of RTG and RTM. I think that, you know, we have seen some improvements. It's also at a time when ridership is very low on the train, but I can also tell you that I take transit quite regularly. I wouldn't say frequently, because I don't go out of my house frequently, but I do take it regularly. And, when it is operating, when the train is operating well, there's no better way of moving around the city. I do have to reiterate what was Councillor Leeper said. Now is not the time to scale back on transit operations. Now is the time to find a way to look at, you know, that revenue base versus fare base system. And while we can't as a city do it ourselves, you know, the federal government also has a commitment to climate action, and having transit systems across this country that are running, that are operating for people for free certainly is something that we have to start asking for. So I do want to be part of that ongoing conversation. Obviously, the city can't do it on our own, but we have to start demanding that of other partners, other government partners. I just want to ask about stage two, in particular the Trillium line, because I'm in and around it often. I just wondered what the progress is with TNEX in terms of the trains. I've noted that the tracks don't seem to be well, they're not being laid. We still have, it looks to me like there's a delay, and fool us once, but fool us twice. This time we have to ask the tough questions going into service revenue. So where are we at with stage two? Are they on time? In particular TNEX, because there was quite a bit of questioning around the SNC-Lavalin getting that contract. So I will be asking this question monthly. I want to know where they are in terms of revenue, their project agreements. And if I can't ask that now, I will do a full and very comprehensive inquiry.
Well, we were going to see if John can answer that question now for you, but as soon as you said you want to start asking that monthly, I'm going to ask that be asked monthly at FEDCO versus transit, if it's a question on the stage two progress, please.
Yeah, sure.
John, is there anything you can give her now, or should we postpone to FEDCO?
No, I think it should go to FEDCO. I would just say the following. We just gave an update at FEDCO. There's a video, there's a report, a presentation on that, and laying of tracks, that's not the indicator. The indicator, if you look at the video and the update, there's a lot of structure work that's being done. That's the critical path and the vehicles. So Councillor, you know the response is Fedco. I mean, I'd be happy to give you more. And by the way, fool me once, fool me twice. That's directed at others, I hope, and not this team. The due diligence of watching the schedule oversight, I think somebody asked that earlier on. We are doing all that, and I'd be happy to elaborate at Fedco where we are and what the challenges are and if there's issues.
Okay. Okay. No, I appreciate that it's not in terms of reference here, but certainly I will be bringing it to Fedco and just want to make sure that we're keeping our eye on stage two, in particular for me, the Trillium line. Thank you.
Good. Thank you, Councillor McKinney. Don't go too far because Councillor Menard's up next and then that's it. So we'll be going to item number two, which you held. So hopefully you can stay with us. Councillor Menard.
Thanks very much, Chair. It's a beautiful day outside, trying to get a bit of fresh air while we're going through this meeting, but it's been very interesting to listen to, and thank you for staff and all the councillors with the questions. It's been very, very helpful to get the information today. I just wanted to jump in on transit as a service and, you know, some of the task force that Councillor Gower was talking about and Councillor Kavanaugh and Councillor McKinney. You know, personally, I've been working with the school boards in Ottawa, as well as OSTA, the Ottawa Student Transportation Authority, and I've also raised this now with OC Transpo too around transit as a service, similar to a Victoria model where they've implemented a no charge service, or if you want to call it a U-Pass, whatever it may be, for students and folks under a certain age. And they've done it through different revenue streams, but it's worked out very well. And so I think that's the type of conversation we need to be having in Ottawa as well, and looking at transit as a service. And certainly those conversations have started. You know, we're going to be releasing a paper shortly on some of this information. But I do want to follow up and see if we can get a task force started with councillors and look at this idea more wholesomely, given what has been occurring across North America in this regard. So I just wanted to jump in and mention that, and thank staff for the wholesome updates today. Back to you, Chair.
Sorry, I temporarily lost connection here. Okay, so that's it for questions on that. So is that report received?
Received.
Thank you very much. And thank you, Mr. Manconi, and your entire team for all their work on that. Item number two is the delegation of authority contracts awarded for the period from July 1st, 2019 to December 31st, 2019. And Councillor McKinney, you had a few questions.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, they should be quick. I was just looking at the purchase orders and down at the, I think it's the very last item. I don't have it up on my screen. The bottom of the document is a line item to purchase 11 40-foot transit buses from Nova Bus. And I just wondered if that included the electric buses that the commission was directed to be bought back in June 2019.
No, that's a different contract.
Okay. And will the electric buses be actually ready for service on December 1st? I think that was part of the RFP, was that we would have a number of electric buses available.
We're going to be bringing forward an update in that regard. On that bus. I mean, we're moving along. COVID had some impacts on staff resources, but we've got an update coming on that.
At the next transit commission, is that, or at?
No, I was thinking of issuing a memo. I know other councillors had questions, and I know the mayor, the chair, everybody's been asking. So, you know, as things relaxed a bit, everybody's now asking, where are all the projects? And so, where all the projects, there's been a lot of work going on. So, but we'll give you a wholesome update.
Okay, I look forward to that. Thank you, Chair, that's all.
Thank you, Councillor McKinney. So is that report received then?
Sorry, Mr. Chair, I have a question. I think also so does Councillor Cloutier.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Thanks. Oh, sorry, now my phone's ringing. Goodness, apologies. I only have one question. So in line 2 in the document is listed under professional operations and maintenance services for the city's Confederation Line light rail transit project in the amount of just over $550,000. The vendor is listed as SDV Canada Consulting, Inc. According to their website, they're an architectural, engineering, planning, environmental, and construction management services for transportation systems, infrastructure, buildings, energy, and other facilities. Very long description. What does this work entail?
STV has been providing support through two ways. They're part of the consortium that's doing the engineering design for both stage 1 and stage 2, which went through a competitive process. And they're also on the standing offer for support services for the assessments. The specialties that Troy was talking about, he has a vehicle engineer, they have track engineers, they have metal people and so forth. So it's a wide range of both railway and wayside systems. So a wide range of support to us. And I would imagine I'd have to look in the details. A big chunk of that is the rolling tab that we have going back to RTG.
Okay, so this is just essentially additional expert support on rail systems, maintaining the rail system as well as providing some oversight, I guess, in terms of the work that's being done by RTG. Is that correct?
Yeah, and in the specialized areas. So, wheel experts is an example, metal experts, you don't retain those on staff because you don't need them on a regular basis. So you consult for those people.
Okay, excellent. I was just wondering about that, but thank you very much. That's it for my questions on this item, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner Wright-Gilbert. So next up, Vice Chair Cloutier, please.
Thank you, Chair. Merci beaucoup. John, Pat or Troy, very quickly, line items 10 and 18 refer to the operations, the maintenance, the support of the automated fare control systems and the back office support. Is that not part of the RT? Why is that an OC Transpo purchase? Is that not part of the RTGRTM contract for the operation of the LRT?
No, it is not, Mr. Vice Chair. The operation of the fare system, that is the ticket machines, the fare gates, and the back end that supports them, was not part of RTG's assignment. It's not been delivered by RTG. It's a separate contract that we have with the company listed there, Scheidt & Bachmann.
Okay. And I ask because in the past we've been told if those fare gates don't operate, that is RTG's cost or problem. If ever the fare gates stay open or can't operate, it's an RTG issue and they would reimburse us for the lost revenue on that. Did I misunderstand that element?
Perhaps we weren't clear enough. The vendor, the supplier is Scheidt & Bachmann. They have committed to supply those services 100% all of the time, and if there's any lost revenue as a result of a gap in that system, it's replaced by them, Scheidt & Bachmann. It's not
it is that supplier, not RTGRTM, that would reimburse us. I understand a little bit better. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair. That's all my questions.
Great. Thank you, Vice Chair. So, now I'll ask again, is report the delegation of authority report received?
Received.
And item 3, the 2020 Transit Operating and Capital Budget Q2 Status Report and COVID-19 Financial Mitigation Strategies. Councillor Brockington, you held that item.
Thanks, Chair. I did. Just a few quick questions. Just give me one second. So thank you for the quarterly update. Of course, the COVID impact is very hard on both the lack of revenues, or revenue decrease, and cost increase. I just wanted to focus first on the non-COVID deficit, which is at the very bottom of page 5. Staff indicate a non-COVID deficit of $12.4 million, citing insurance, higher staffing costs, and the addition of R1 and S1. Could staff just, what's driving that? Is the insurance cost driving that? Insurance has been on our minds lately. Is it the additional staff? What's the key issue here?
Yeah, good afternoon, Counselor. It's Wendy Stephenson here. And what's driving that is really the insurance claim cost. Okay. Yeah, so it's approximately 37% of that piece.
Very good. Good to hear your voice. Either to you, Madam Treasurer, or Mr. Manconi, we have, as a council, agreed to freeze fares in 2020. And there was talk when this decision was being debated that it would have to be revisited before the calendar year ended. What is going to happen with fares? Where is the discussion about the future of fares for council or the Transit Commission?
So the motion that you approved said when the city manager and myself deem that the service that RTM is delivering is reliable and consistent, we memo you and tell you that we're reinstating the fare increase. We're positioned to do that. The issue, it's a difficult one, is when is it good enough? And I'm not talking from a default perspective. I'm talking about a consistent. And you heard my opening comments, so you can connect up the dots. I said that I'll be more comfortable when we get through some winter. Yep. The challenge with that is we're running out of months to institute any fare increase. And there's a compounding effect, because that just builds over the years. It's hundreds of millions or millions of dollars that gets compounded. Plus, you know, the challenge of introducing a fare increase during a pandemic and all those things. So we've got a little team together, myself, Ms. Stephenson, others, the city manager, and we're trying to figure out how do we determine if in this year that we can bring forward that recommendation. Obviously, I'm not there yet because we got to get through some colder months and they got to finish the rectification piece. So it's a bit of a non-answer to you, Councillor, but that's where we are.
No, that does answer it for me. And again, John, you know where I'm coming from. I'm worried about our financial situation and the long-term viability of the transit services in the city. And I just wanted to get refreshed on where we were with that. I just have one more question. It's sort of in the weeds when I look through the detailed spreadsheets that accompanied the report. And there's one report. It's called Listing of Transit Deferred 2020 Projects. It's at the very back. Transportation Services Department. There are two lines that are the same in the report. One, it says bus stops and shelters. And the other, it says bus stops and shelters 2020. Both are worth $900,000. So have all bus stops and shelters in 2020 been held back, or only a subset of a larger number?
I don't know off the top. I know it's part of our cost containment strategy that speaks to what you've been raising as concerns. Pat, do you know, or is that something we have to get back to the councillor?
Those are... John, Mr. Chair, those are two amounts which we had authority to spend. Those are amounts that had not yet been needed in to the point where we made the decisions, where it became important that we had to return some capital to reserve to allow for budget balancing. Because those were amounts that hadn't yet been spent and that we didn't see were likely to be fully spent before the end of the year, we advised finance that they could be return to source.
Okay, but there have been new bus stops and shelters constructed across the city in 2020, correct?
There have been, and there continue to be from other previous or separate funding sources.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Brockington. Commissioner Wright-Gilbert, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have one question. So in document four, again, it's the list of deferred transit deferred 2020 projects. There is a line item. It's 909094, IT Technology Systems Paratranspo. We are deferring $500,000 from that item. I'm wondering, what is included in this item?
Mr. Chair, similarly to the bus shelters, that's authority we had for future software upgrades in this case, which, as it turns out, are not required in the year 2020. We can move those into a future year. So that would have been to allow for version upgrades on the basic operating system. As it has turned out, the the work that we're doing this year, which was first to move to version 18 of that software, and second to install all of the online services for customers, was sufficiently funded from other sources, and this particular authority isn't required in this calendar year.
So if I understand you correctly, there is going to be no impact to our paratranspo customers as a result of this deferral. So there won't, all the things that we've said we're working on, the online booking and Parapay and all those sort of various projects, there will be no impact to those projects whatsoever?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay, thank you. Those are my questions, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner Wright Gilbert. So would this report be received?
Received.
Thank you. Okay, that covers off the agenda. So now we're going on to in-camera items. There are none. Notices of motion. Does anybody have a notice of motion?
Chair, if I could just interrupt, the last item also needs to be carried because it's going to council.
The which has to be carried, sorry?
The previous item, item number three.
Okay. Oh, I thought we had just carried that.
There are two motion. There are no, two elements, Chair.
That was the commission received, but it needs to be carried as well.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Is item number three carried, please?
Carried.
Carried.
Yeah. Carried.
Thank you. Okay. So no in camera. Is there any notice of motions? Okay. None. Is there any inquiries?
I have an inquiry, Chair.
Okay, Councillor Sutz, go ahead.
And I've submitted this as well, so there is a copy, but I'll read it out. So at the December 11th, 2019 meeting, Council unanimously adopted Motion 25-6 that was moved by myself and seconded by Councillor Menard. Since then, senior levels of management have voiced recognition of the importance of electrification of municipal transportation networks. Similar municipalities to Ottawa have received funding from senior levels of government in support of their accelerated adoption of alternative technologies, including electric buses and the required charging infrastructure. So I have 3 points here asking for staff to provide the following information. The first is an overview of the progress made for the procurement of electric buses required to start the electric pilot, and please outline any barriers that may have been encountered and if future procurement may be streamlined with insights learned in this procurement process. Secondly, when can Council expect the majority of paratranspo fleet to need life cycle upgrades or replacements? Will OC Transpo have sufficient information from the electric pilot to recommend non-diesel options? And lastly, number three, provide an update on motion 15-12 moved by the mayor and seconded by Chair Hubley at the council meeting of June 12, 2019. And if further funding options exist, such as leveraging the $6 million with the available $10 million from FCM's Green Municipal Fund capital project stream. That's all. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Is there any other inquiries? Okay, other business? Does anybody have anything under that? No? Okay, so can we have a motion to adjourn?
Adjourned.
Great, thank you. Okay, everybody, thank you very much. Our next meeting will be Wednesday, October 21st. Have a great month.
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.